gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, DC Superpowers fans. Welcome back to DC Superpowers Podcast. I'm your host, Ken. Sitting along with me is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, guys.
This is issue 16 for July 23rd of 2016, and we actually have a very special guest with us this week. Sitting here in the Hall of Justice with us, we have the man who started the Tangent Bound Network and the Tangent Bound Podcast, Mark Bogner. Welcome, Mark.
Who's that guy?
I don't know. This is what you told me when you sent me the information saying you'd be on the show.
Your check's in the mail. hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. So what do you think of our recording studio here in the basement of the Hall of Justice?
It's actually a lot bigger than I thought it would be.
See? Hey, those guys over
at... Now you can put the word out.
Huh?
So now I can put the word out and let them know we're not in just a small little closet.
That's right. See, the Mighty Marvel geeks keep making fun of us that we're in this little broom closet. No, no, no.
Yeah.
The Hall of Justice does everything big, including their closets.
Well, I'll tell you what. Nothing better than a big closet.
Say that again.
So, Super Friends, we're going to have a little bit different this week. We're going to have a little light on the news, even though Comic-Con is going on right now. But we have a big announcement for our Comic-Con coverage. For next week, we've actually, for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, we've talked to Mike and Eric and Kylan over at the Mighty Marvel Geeks, and we've actually put Cyborg on a little project for us. Cyborg has been playing with his mother boxes, and he's figured out a way to get a boom tube to go from our universe here at the Hall of Justice into the above ground, or let me get this right, we're going to be able to go into the Marvel Universe, into the above ground underwater suborbital volcano lair, I believe what it is. And we're going to be joining the Mighty Marvel Geeks next week for all the Comic-Con coverage.
By the way, Gazoom type in.
Yeah. See, ours is easy. Our base, we're in the basement of the Hall of Justice. We don't have just some defunct old S.H.I.E.L.D. base.
Hey, with Nick Fury, I guess you got to deal with all that. I mean, that dude's everywhere.
Exactly. Hey, at least we get to talk to the heroes.
Right. We kind of live with them. I mean, how long have we been here now?
This is 16 issues, so it's 16 weeks.
Yeah.
Dude, 16 issues.
See, I can say one thing. I became close to Plastic Man the way I thought, but not close enough to Fire.
Ah, okay. And Power Girl, she looks... It'd be awesome to get close to, but that might hurt.
Well, you know, I got to meet...
I'm not Deadpool. We'll see, maybe he can deal with that when we cross over, but me...
Ah, okay. Yeah. What'd you have, Mark? Who'd you meet?
I got to meet Batman upstairs just for a quick second. You know, we were in the kitchen, and I was just trying to grab a little coffee. And, you know, he's got this wonderful espresso machine that I'm not allowed to touch because it's his money. I don't know. But
I mean, it seems like that guy just brings
seems like a nice guy.
He seems like he gets into all the nice, expensive things. I don't know how he's doing it, but
I know. Well,
I was a little stingy, though. I figured it was for the whole group. Why can't I have, you know, some espresso? I mean, that's all I really wanted.
Pretty much. Well, as it was said back in the 80s, where did you get those wonderful toys?
Ah, 1989.
Nice.
I didn't somebody tell me he had one of those things.
Those things.
That is still, in my opinion, one of the greatest Batman movies ever made.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
1989 Batman, Joker, with Jack Nicholson there. It was absolutely a beautiful movie.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that in the theater, I don't know, probably, I want to say 14 times, 15
nice.
Times.
Nice. That was back when you could afford to go see it
on VHS.
Yeah, that was back when you could afford to see it in 14, 15 times. So, but we have a couple other things. Before we get into talking to Mark some and talking about the network and all the stuff that's coming up with that, we have a couple of housekeeping things here for the Superpowers podcast. Remember, we are still running our iTunes contest, Super Friends. Go over to iTunes, leave us a rating and review. As soon as we get 10 ratings or reviews, we're actually going to draw one name out of those people to receive a copy of DC Rebirth Special Number 1, first printing, second printing, and third printing all together. Because each one, they actually made them a little bit different each time.
So I guess I should go leave a review then.
Yeah. We have one review right now. It's from Rutrow. So leave us a review. As soon as we get 10, we'll draw a name and you'll have it on your way. We have all three copies sitting here waiting for you. And then, Vernon and I are going to start filling a box with comics, collectibles, all kinds of craziness. Every multiple of 10 reviews that we get on iTunes, we're going to draw a name and send you something out of the prize box.
Ooh.
So, if you want something from us, you got to leave us a review. That's all. It's easy. It takes you 30 seconds. A couple other things we've already mentioned. Next week, we will be actually joining the Mighty Marvel Geeks over in their show to talk all the Comic-Con news. Now, there's a couple things that came out of Comic-Con we're going to talk about a little bit today, but not a whole lot, because like I said, we record, you guys know, on Saturday morning. So, Comic-Con's still going, and all of the television and cinematic stuff is today. So, I've heard there's been people waiting in line since yesterday to get bracelets to get into these panels. All of your CW shows, all of the Arrowverse, Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, all of those are today. So not like putting everything together.
Yeah, well, hey.
So that we're going to talk all about that with Mighty Marvel Geeks. We're still, Vernon and I have been talking, I think we're going to do a separate review and preview show so you still get your previews and reviews for the week. But the Comic-Con news will be over on Mighty Marvel Geeks. You're still going to be able to get it on our DC Superpowers feed also, so you don't have to go to their feed to get it. The other one we have is, remember, on Monday night, that's the 25th of July, right, Vernon?
Yes, sir.
Vernon will actually be at the Cinemark Next Gen Theater in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, for the 7:30 showing of The Killing Joke. Anybody who's wanting to go over and see The Killing Joke that happens to be in the Northeast Ohio area, go meet up with Vernon. He's going to be sitting there, watch the movie with everybody, and then afterwards he's going to have all the mobile recording gear so that he can actually talk to people about what you thought of the movie.
I'm just going to be a comic book nerd sitting there seeing a book I've been waiting to see on screen come true. Killing Joke is just going to be awesome. I'll be there waiting for you guys. If anybody wants to talk about their thoughts on the movie, how they felt about it, if there's something you didn't like, which I don't believe is going to happen, but we can definitely talk about what we loved. So I'll be there recording.
Can I just say how excited I am for this movie to be here, to finally happen? Because, first of all, The Killing Joke is probably one of my absolute favorite books of all time. I might be able to go see it on Wednesday, because unfortunately I won't be able to see it in your area on Monday because I'll be doing some other stuff around the house. But I am so excited because we've got Kevin Conroy, we've got Mark Hamill. I mean, the original Batman and Joker right there on screen, the big screen even.
Yeah. Yep.
This is a big first for these guys.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't think it's a first. I think they had the showing of Mask of the Phantasm in theaters. Ooh.
Yeah. I don't really count that, and I really should though. But the Killing Joke, I mean, for me anyway, this is so awesome.
Well, Conroy and Hamill are not the only two. Tara Strong is actually coming back to do Barbara Gordon.
Right.
She was Barbara Gordon in the original.
I forgot about
and
that.
I don't remember if he was the original Commissioner Gordon, but we got Ray Wise as Commissioner Gordon.
I might can look that up.
Yeah, check out, was he the original commissioner real quick, Vernon? But no, this is going to be a phenomenal. Now, the ticket sales have been going so well for this that, Mark, you're probably not going to be able to see it on Wednesday because it was originally supposed to be a one-day run.
Well, okay, that was a one-day in select areas.
Yeah.
When I checked my area, it said that it was only on Wednesday.
Oh, that's different. Okay. Because I know Fathom Events added a second day. That's why I'm actually going to go see it Tuesday night because the ticket sales have done so well. That they added extra showings. So that may be why you're able to see it.
Yeah, could be. Could very well be.
So, but anybody who can't make it to the theater, this is actually going to be ready for digital download in HD on the 26th, on Tuesday. And then it's going to come out on Blu-ray and DVD on August 2nd. So
I need to own this.
Yes.
And yeah, he did not play the original Commissioner Gordon.
Okay, well, do you know who Ray Wise is?
Yes.
He's this guy that he's been in everything.
Everything.
Everywhere.
Well, I'm looking up his film, his filmographic roles, and he has over 200. So, yeah.
He's been in all kinds of...
expecting to scroll down the list. That's why it took me so long to get to, like, the 90s. I'm like, oh, my goodness, this guy's been in everything.
He's one of those 18. Actors that if you see his face, you know him. You've seen him everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this guy everywhere.
What are some of the big ones you've seen in it?
RoboCop, Star Trek, what was the other one? Twin Peaks, of course. The Chase.
Did anybody ever see Reaper? Powder. Did you guys see the TV
Powder,
show
I
Reaper?
I used to love
it. I used
that
to
show.
Watch
he
that.
He played the devil in Reaper.
That's right. No, that was like I said, back when SmackDown was still on, I think, the CW.
Yeah. So that's Commissioner Gordon in this.
Oh, and he played in Jeepers Creepers, too. That's, I think, the first movie I actually remember from my childhood, which I probably shouldn't be watching Jeepers Creepers at.
You're one of the few people that actually saw Jeepers Creepers, too.
As a kid, you know, that was just, it was scary to me. So, of course, I had to watch it. But older I got, I was like, yeah, I see what people were talking about.
Well, another one that this is the first, remember, this is the first ever DC animated movie that actually has an R rating.
Right, yeah. This is the first DC movie ever radar in theaters. I know, yeah. We had the Batman vs. Superman, but that was for a digital release first, then the DVD.
And
but
Super
this
Friends
is the first one in the theater.
We are planning on doing a DC or Batman v Superman Ultimate Edition review, but yeah. There's so much stuff going on in the next 2 weeks that we've not had a chance to sit down and talk about it much at all. So probably sometime in middle August, we'll actually sit down, myself and Vernon, and actually do a full review of the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman.
Yeah, and I was going to say, there's some podcasters and other, like, YouTube reviews I've been watching. They said they're not going to get to it either because it already came out on the the digital download came out, and they're waiting for this. So
yeah.
Now they have to wait till everything else with San Diego Comic-Con's over before they can review it. So
this is, well, for myself, because I'm part of Geek Watch 1 also, we got Comic-Con this weekend. In 2 weeks, Vicky and I are going to actually be out at Gen Con. So the end of this month, early August, is huge, and got 900 different things we got going on all at once. We're trying to figure out how to do shows to get them on, so we have a show for when we're all out of town, like Gen Con. It's just nuts for this next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to join you at the screening on Monday. We actually... go ahead.
Unfortunately, I won't be there with you guys either to discuss Hanna-Barbera, because both these are hand-in-hand with DC comic books right now.
I know. So, but anybody also in the Ohio area, or yeah, in the Northeast Ohio area, Geek Watch 1 is having their Meeplecast on Monday night. That's actually where we have a live show at a place called the Malted Meeple in Hudson, Ohio. Anybody who's interested, go to Geek Watch 1's Facebook page. There's an event on there, and it'll give you all the information. So, I think that covers most of the stuff that we wanted to cover on here at the moment, other than, welcome, Mark.
Hello.
So
good to be here.
Tell us, now at the end of every show, we tell them we're proud members of the Tangentbound Network and tell everybody how to get to tangentboundnetwork.com. But what is the Tangentbound Network?
Never heard of it.
Well, I hope you've heard of it.
Basically, the Tangentbound Network is basically a place where podcasters can call themselves home. What we like to do is we like to help people gain the momentum needed to get started or move forward in the ranks. We like to help promote the little guy. We like to help do all that stuff, help people even get started, you know, what equipment to use, what kind of stuff. And Ken, you know, you've sat in on one of my panels on how to start a podcast, and I've deferred to you for some responses on what kind of
the software and
equipment, software, things like that, you know. And just basically, this is what I try to do for people is give this information out for free, where there's other people out there that want to charge you for this kind of thing. But I really don't want to do that to people.
Yeah. I know that's one of the reasons what drew Kylan and myself and Vicky and Dawn to you guys back February of last year, I think, is when we met you guys. We met you and Jim out at the Concoction in Cleveland. And Dawn had met or found you guys. She told Kylan and I that we have to get over here and see and talk to you. So when we went to go see you, we went to see you, and within like 2 days, we were already on the network
working with you guys. We like to make sure that, you know, if there's a request in, that we have a relatively quick turnaround. And if you're trying to join the network, I give it a quick little review. Or if you haven't started yet or whatever, I like to make sure that we get you up there and running and just out there for everybody to listen to.
That is awesome. So how long have you guys been working on or doing the network and stuff?
Well, the network has been around for coming up on 4 years.
And I started podcasting almost 5 years ago, but I started the network literally a year later to the date. And we kind of it really didn't gain momentum right away. It was more, I started adding shows one by one. In fact, I offered for a while free hosting for people, free podcast hosting, and create their RSS feed for them and everything like that. But it actually got to be very expensive to do that.
Yeah.
But, I ended up stopping doing that, but now it's just, we're trying to utilize people's own momentum to push them even further.
Okay.
It's really cool. What we're trying to do to make sure that everybody's promoted and everything. So.
Awesome. I know we've had a great time working with you guys, and actually we have some other stuff coming up in the future that, with the network and with, the GeekWatch One family of podcasts that we're going to be doing together. You want to talk about that and plug some of the shows we got coming up and stuff?
I kind of lost you there for a second. Hang on.
Oh, sorry.
All right, go ahead.
No, I know we have some things coming up between working with the Tangibound Network and GeekWatch One and Superpowers and stuff, some shows and things coming up that we're kind of co-promoting together. You want to tell listeners about that a little bit?
Yeah, actually. We got some great things happening. You know, you and I have been partnering together now on, this project coming up in, it's November 10th through the 13th, right? Yeah. Con on the Cob. We're trying to get a lot of podcasters together in the same room, and try to get more, presence for both, the GeekWatch One family as well as the Tangibound Network, and just trying to help, each other grow through this event. And, hopefully we can get more exposure for everybody. And, I think it's going to be a fun time.
Awesome.
You so, Mark, still there with me?
We found out about, we know we've got Con of the Cob coming up. Oddmalls also are coming up. Now, you can go to conofthecob.com or oddmall.info to find out about all the upcoming shows for that. But how many shows do you actually have on the network? You said you've been up and running for 4 years now.
We have probably, I want to say, about 130-plus shows. And we've just been slowly gaining that popularity. And I don't want to say popularity, but, you know, people looking for a place they can call home. They're looking for, help in getting their show running, things like that. And we're all too happy to do it. So, yeah, right now we've got about 130-plus shows, and we're still growing strong. And just kind of warms my heart when people are like, hey, we like you,
Cool. Well, let's get into the actual DC Comics side of it. Have you been a comics fan forever, all the way back to your childhood, or how did this start for you?
Well, you know, it's funny is, and I'm going to use the bad word here. I started off in my early childhood as a Marvel guy. I know, like I said, bad word here.
That's fine.
But
I was too, actually.
We enjoy all comics. That's why we're sister show with a Marvel show.
Yeah. The older I got, I became more of a DC guy, but I'm in the same boat as you.
I started off small. I started with G.I. Joe on the Marvel side. Then I went into X-Men. And then all of a sudden, my friend pops over and says, here, check this out. He started with Batman. And then there was a Dark Knight series that Gotham
Miller.
By Gaslight was first, was my first purchase. But I started reading, there was, it was the Dark Knight, or Legends of the Dark Knight, maybe? It was the variant covers, there was yellow, blue, green, they were all just a plain cover, they just had the outline of Batman, but it was all dark, and then, but yeah, that's kind of where I got started, and these were, I want to say this was late 80s, early 90s, maybe?
Okay.
That this came out, I'll send you a picture later of the ones that I'm talking about.
Okay.
Right now they're in the bedroom and my wife is asleep, so I gotta go bother her. What are you doing? I'm rooting for comics. It's early. I started getting into Batman, and then after that I started to slowly move into Green Arrow, and then Flash, and then, you know, I kind of steer clear of Aquaman. I kind of always have, but, you know, it's some really good stuff. I've been a fan of DC since Vernon's holding up the Aquaman comic. Nice. I've always been into comics just in general since I was probably, I want to say, 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah. Well, I can see now, because you said earlier, what you liked about DC. Well, let's go ahead and go over that because we said that off air anyway. What was it that actually, you said you started a Marvel guy and then moved on to DC. What was it about DC that brought you into changing companies, basically?
Batman?
What was it about Batman? Was it anything specific, or was it just...
Was it a certain portrayal of him, or...?
No, it was just, you know, my first experience was the Killing Joke.
And
everybody knew who the Joker was, you know, because growing up in the 70s and 80s, yes, I'm old. Old AF. But growing up at that time, you know, you had the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, the Justice League, Batman and Robin, so on and so forth. So, I mean, I was always a fan. I was always aware of Batman. I was always aware of, like, Superman. And so, I mean, I've always kind of known that universe, but I've never really been a part of it or delved into it.
Dove?
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, I've never really got into it until I was about seven or eight, when did Killing Joke come out? That came out in 91?
I can tell you here in just a
minute. I want to say it was before the 90s, because who was that? Was that Steven Spielberg for the first Batman movie in the 80s, late 80s?
You mean Tim Burton.
Tim Burton did the 1989 Batman.
Yeah, he read that book to help him create the Jack Nicholson Joker, so it had to be, I want to say, in the 80s.
1988.
Yep.
You're right. Okay. There you go. All right. So, yes, I was actually 8 years old. Fall of 88 is when I turned 8. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't math. It's early.
Wait, you're not that old then, because I'm only a couple... That's the case. I'm only about 9 years behind you. No.
I'm 42 years old.
Yeah, Vernon. He's closer to me than you.
Oh, okay. Man, that doesn't... Man, I remember watching that like 3 years after... Man.
Yeah, wow. Vernon, you're still a kid.
Whippersnapper, I've been doing comic books longer than you. Get off my lawn.
So we basically started reading it about the same time, because... you said earlier how you liked DC, that it always felt gritty and dark and stuff to you, but for me, it was the opposite, because I started at Flash... It moved on to Superman, Green Lantern, and the light side of DC Comics. For me, it was always fun and light and fantasy.
Well, you know, Flash is generally lighter than, say, you know, Green Arrow or Batman or whatever. I mean, Batman, a lot of those stories, I mean, they're dark. I mean, you have an orphaned child who's bent on a sort of a weird psychosis side of revenge where I got to go clean up the streets of Gotham. So you got this,
and Gotham itself is just gritty and
exactly.
That's what I said. So, having us come in from opposite sides of this, we had a totally different view of the actual whole universe of it.
Yeah, and my friend, he's the one who turned me on to it, so I kind of blame him for my my addiction to comics in general. But you know, having started off with polar opposite side with Marvel and then jumping into dark and gritty with Batman, immediately just being engrossed and enthralled with the story. And I mean, you know, I've always known the story of Batman, but I never actually read the story of Batman until later. And it was just like, oh my goodness. You know, have you ever read something or watched something where it just flushes over you and gives you the chills and that whole holy mackerel, it just drives this emotional force within you. And that's what happened to me when I started reading Batman. And I know that sounds kind of nerdy, but well, I'm a nerd. I like it.
Yeah.
We're in the Hall of Justice doing a DC Comics podcast. I think we understand what you're saying.
We're all
on the same level here. Coffee, though. You hear me, Batman? I'm still bitter about the coffee.
Batman can hear everything in here.
Yeah, you might not want to do that. Sorry.
Well, then I better not do my Joker impression.
Yeah, he might come in here. Who are you?
Where's the Joker? Speaking of that, Vernon saw it this morning. This morning, did you see that video I sent you, Mark? Did you get a chance to watch through that at all for Justice League Action?
I have not. I just clicked on it. I've got it in a tab right now, but I want to watch it while I'm talking to you guys.
Well, at Comic-Con, a couple things that has come out of Comic-Con was they did a Justice League Action panel. It's a brand new show coming to Cartoon Network. And it, Vernon, you want to talk a little bit about it? You did a little bit of the research for it, too.
For?
The Justice League Action.
Oh, yes. Okay, so Justice League Action is basically going to be like what Brave and the Bold was, if anybody's familiar with that. It's going to be something like a team-up of two characters in each episode. You'll have somebody like, say, Wonder Woman and Plastic Man, or Blue Beetle and Superman, or Green Lantern, Batman, something like that in each episode.
But without, really, it said without all the campiness that was from that.
Exactly. So it's going to be more like a Justice League
Unlimited
series,
version.
Just the Unlimited, exactly, of that, mixed in with a little bit of Brave and the Bold. They did say there's some odd, little goofy parts in there, something like Teen Titans Go, but not major, but just enough to give you that little bit of humor and giggle bit from there.
I love Teen Titans. I really do.
Teen Titans or Teen Titans Go?
Well, it really depends on the mood I'm in. My daughter introduced me to Teen Titans, the cartoon, on, Cartoon Network, and then they've got, you know, but I just kind of got a kick out of it. I thought that was just great. And then, you know, having watched the other one, I was like,
and also with this show, also like Teen Titans Go, if anybody, I'm pretty sure everybody has seen it at some point by now. There's a lot of Easter egg references in that show. Like, if you look behind the wall, there's like posters of Superman or Plastic Man up there, which they never shown in the original. Well, in this one, from just a trailer, there's a lot of little subtle Easter eggs in there. Like, there's the I think I seen Snapper Carr, Martian Manhunter, and they were flying through space in a car, and it's like, some of that's only for fans that know about the show. Or the comic books, I'm sorry.
So they also said that some of the other Easter eggs is more for the adults. Because they at one point, there's something they're doing, and actually on a screen somewhere, they flash through every Wonder Woman costume that's ever been out there, including the 1970s Kathy Lee Crosby costume from the TV movie.
What?
Yep.
There's also a spot where Superman actually peels the S-Shield off of his chest and throws it.
Sounds a little something like
that. It's stuff
like
that the adults are going to pick up, but kids are not going to have any idea what's going on with it.
Yeah, and that's what I love about the show, because it, I don't know, it's like Teen Titans Go thing I had about that. It is a kids show, and that to me is strictly for kids. Now, it does tend to comic book fans if you can get the Easter eggs or the little small references, but still overall kids show. With this, first you can sit down with your 8-year-old son or daughter, and you being the parent can watch, and all of you guys are having the exact same fun.
Who says it has to be for kids?
It doesn't.
I was just saying, you know, you say it's a kid's show. Well, is it really?
Go back to the 90s with Bruce Timm, when he started the Bruce Timm universe for the animation. The Batman animated series, the Superman animated series, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, those were not written just for kids.
Kids, right.
But then that Warner Brothers for Tim's, a while was doing that.
Yeah. That's what I meant. In recent years, it seemed like they've been targeting more so for the younger audience. I mean, they've always been out there for the younger audience, but this was specifically for kids. And I think they were doing that. I think that was a good thing, because a lot of the cartoons, like we used to watch, adults really enjoyed. And as a kid, there were some things in Justice League Unlimited I didn't really get until I got older. So that's why I said I think they're getting a good balance right now with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I got excited about was we know the Killing Joke is bringing back Conroy and Mark Hamill and Tara Strong to the, but Justice League Action is also bringing back Kevin Conroy is doing Batman, Mark Hamill is doing Joker when they have Joker on it. They have Diedrich Bader, who has been doing DC voices for a long time. He's actually doing Booster Gold.
Booster Gold this time around, and from what Kevin Conroy was saying, having him and Mark Hamill, having both of them in separate rooms, you can see the similarities between both of them, because they're so animated when they're doing these voice roles.
Mm-hmm.
They're everywhere.
I've watched a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff that they were using to promote this months ago, and showing, you know, Mark Hamill getting all into the Joker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And watching Kevin Conroy get into the Batman, you know. So I mean, it was really cool to sit there and watch how they work. And you don't even see Mark Hamill or Kevin Conroy. You just see the character, and it's like, oh wow, that's magical.
Well, did either one of you see any of the stuff from Star Wars Celebration last week?
I have not.
I did not.
Me has been working.
Well, Mark Hamill,
and I was just going strictly on the DC stuff. I said I'd get to all that when I get done.
Mark Hamill did a panel where it was just him for an hour, and he did one of the monologues from The Killing Joke as the Joker. Mm-hmm. And you see him get it, and dude, he's like the only Joker for me, I think. I've heard a lot of other guys do Joker in the last 10, 15 years, that since he's stepped away from the role about 10 years ago or so, wasn't it? He stepped away for a while. But no one else can capture the Joker the way he does.
Yeah, I see, no one can, but from hearing the Killing Jokes spoke from a Joker character, who was that? Troy Baker when he was voicing...
Troy Baker when he did the Arkham
you seen that?
Asylum? Was
Arkham
it?
Origins?
Arkham Origins, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, when he was on a panel, they said, hey, could you read off the Killing Joke? And he...
This is awesome, because he was just like, all right, you know, whatever. He pulls it up on his phone and he goes, yep. Memories can be vile. Repulsive yep. little brutes, like children, I suppose. And he just went on, and everybody was just like...
In awe. Everybody was quiet. They were like... They just completely silent. They had to hear that, because we never heard Joker's voice for that at all. And then we got Mark Hamill. So I have to put Troy Baker in there, because he was the first one to read some dialogue from there.
But I'll have to go back and catch that, because I don't think I've heard him do Joker.
It was truly beautiful, man.
Oh, he's awesome. Like, if something ever happens to Mark Hamill's voice and he can't do it, get Troy Baker. He's definitely a runner-up.
Okay. I know, what was it? For Young Justice was the one that I was not... They had Joker for a couple of episodes of Young Justice. Whoever they had doing it there, that it just did not work. It was a totally different direction for the way Joker should be done.
And I heard that from a couple different people that were watching that show said the same thing.
It was just weird. So, but we got a lot of stuff coming up here. We got one other thing out of Comic-Con that I did want to talk about today. Actually, on Thursday morning, they did a breakfast where, let me see the actual name of it. Dan DiDio, Jim Lee did a media breakfast, I believe it was, at Comic-Con. And the headline for the article, the Hollywood Reporter was reporting that Comic-Con, DC's Rebirth brings sales boost for the superhero comic line. Now, we've said this since Rebirth came out, that it's been phenomenal. Mark, have you been reading any of the Rebirth stuff yet?
Little bits and pieces here and there. Just what I've got on my my tablet.
Okay. Now, what do you think of what you've read so far?
I like it. Few things that are a little out there, but honest to God, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to say... probably a 9.5 out of 10. I think they're doing a great job.
Awesome. Well, okay. We said pretty much the same thing. There's some of the stuff, like this week, there when we get into Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, there's some weird timeline stuff that there's books that haven't even come out yet that they're referencing in this book and stuff like that. That this, if they could release the books a little bit differently so that it actually line up better, it'd be better. But I know out of nothing, if nothing else, Batman and Superman have been knocking it out of the park, the characters of these two characters.
Not honestly, in my opinion, cannot just them. Aquaman. At first, I don't know if you remember, I was saying they read really good with the New 52 Aquaman. Yeah. I wonder if they bring that over. They're doing great with that. The Green Lanterns is amazing. And honestly, out of all of them, compared to what we've had in New 52, I'm so excited to see our Ollie back.
Yeah. So, but before we get into that, we're going to get into that when we get into the comic reviews here in a couple minutes. But Dan DiDio and Jim Lee, like I said, had a breakfast. I'm just going to pull a couple of quotes out of here, because they were talking about how awesome it's been for their how the sales have been phenomenal. Dan DiDio says, quoted straight up here, even given our expectations for Rebirth, it has been more than 100% exceeding our projections. It says he shied away from giving any actual specific numbers. Which, that's just a normal thing. But it said the retailer orders for releases for the first week of August are roughly equivalent to DC's entire sales for April of this year. So, and then it says, quoted, when you put a number like that up like that, you sit and you start to giggle. You think, holy moly, this worked. People are actually enjoying
that's
this.
That's not what he said.
Well,
I was going to say, if you want me to, Ken, I could quote that. But
no, we're not going to quote it on our show.
Okay, you can say holy crap.
That's right. But then Jim Lee was talking, and he said Rebirth differs from traditional comic book launches in that sales have been actually rising after the first issue, with the second and third issues increasing orders from retailers based on the interest of customers. Then, quote, I've never seen anything like that, and he's actually been in the industry. Everybody in comics knows Jim Lee. He's worked for DC, Marvel, Image, all of them, and he's actually, this year, this is his 30th Comic-Con. He's one of the guys that started Image Comics. So he's been working at this for a while, and he said he's never seen that. Well, we know this, that usually, if you have a giant crossover or something huge in comics, everybody buys the first issue, and then you can drop off.
Yeah, that's what happened with them previously with the New 52.
So, then they said another one, the sales just aren't just up on individual books. They said bookstore market is also expanding. Now, the bookstore market is your Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, places like that. The guys that aren't usually selling, they have the single issues, but not a lot. They're more selling trades and graphic novels. They said the bookstore market is also expanding. Now, quote from DiDio says, we can talk about periodical sales, but if you want to know where the real growth is right now, it's in the mass market, the collections and the graphic novels. We see those expanding on a regular basis. They also, a little farther down in here, they're talking about, they bring up Midnighter. And we mentioned that Midnighter and Apollo actually have a miniseries coming up in October. Midnighter was one of the first ever openly gay superheroes. And it
which
says,
I think it's actually kind of a cool thing to at least break some of these barriers down, especially in the superhero community.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing that I really like about his style, too, and the first time we seen him in the Rebirth was on the Dick Grayson, or not Dick Grayson, I'm sorry, the Nightwing comic book that came out last week. 2 weeks ago.
What, Midnighter was in there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was.
Oh, yeah, that's who that was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that didn't click for me for some reason when I saw it.
The reason why I like his style, if you're trying to get a character like that out, you need to make him familiar, but don't try to change the past of what you already had. Give us a new character. But he is kind of like the Batman now, I guess, for the new era.
Okay.
They're very similar. That's why I think Nightwing was teaming up with him, too. He felt like, hey, this is like Batman right here I'm talking to.
Okay. Well, Dio was talking about Midnighter, and he said, the series launched last year featuring a hyper-violent gay superhero that was met with such critical success, but soft sales after the monthly in its monthly format. So when it first hit, it got super huge, and then it fell off, like we were talking about. It says, as being a title that benefited from this increase was the Midnighter. Quote, we've seen more life from Midnighter in the graphic novel area, leading to the October bringing out the Midnighter and Apollo miniseries, which is, most of these miniseries are made, they put out the single issues, but they're made to sell as graphics later.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons they're aiming towards that. It also, DiDio was also saying, what we've seen is that traditionally, if a book sells poorly as a periodical, it sells poorly as a trade. If it sells extraordinarily well as a periodical, it sells extraordinarily well as a trade. What we've seen is that with Midnighter in particular, which had a lot of great press, a lot of great reviews, that's where we've seen the reviews really informed the sales of the graphic novel collection. So it's like people didn't buy the monthly, but the reviews and stuff were phenomenal. And that actually fueled them to get to this. The other one they said in the graphic novels that's making a big difference is that DC, with their animated movies and their on-television movies, they said traditionally the adaptations of movies to comic book and the ones inspired by the movies really don't do well. But DC sales have been going through the roof on the ones that have been inspiring, like The Killing Joke that has inspired the new movie coming out. The Justice League versus JLA trades sold phenomenally when the movie came out. People are actually watching these movies then going back and buying the trades that inspired the movie.
Yep.
Where they still don't buy the ones that are based on the movie. So, looks like DC's doing some great stuff, obviously. Whatever they're doing is doing it correctly.
Yeah. Can I bash another company just a tidbit? Not so much bash, I guess, but why I am such a DC fan.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right, this is one reason why I even became still and are... I'm still reading more DC and buying more DC comics than Marvel right now. Marvel's changing the comic books to go with their movies, but DC still are comic-based ground, and their movies are based off the books.
Now, the one thing I can say about Marvel is, yes, while they're adapting their comics to go with their movies, they're trying to keep the whole cinematic universe the same, whether it's even just the book side or the movies, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., anything, you know, that they would like to keep it consistent between worlds specifically so that if one thing happens here, they know it's going to affect something here.
Yeah.
DC, to a point, kind of has it right to keep them all separated because we don't know exactly what's going to happen with, certain characters over here as opposed to maybe the Dawn of Justice gun that just happened with Batman v Superman or what have you. So, I mean, I think they kind of have it right, again, to a point, just to keep them separated so that, one, it sets them apart from that other company.
Exactly.
And two,
it allows them to expand in different ways. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the Flarrow TV verse, Flash Arrow, Flarrow. you know, even Legends of Tomorrow, so on and so forth. I think it's kind of cool what they're doing. And in the Arrow side of things, where they introduced the Suicide Squad, you know, a couple seasons ago, a little bit, has nothing to do with Suicide Squad coming out next month.
Yeah.
Right.
You know. But, like, I like the idea that they can expand each individual universe.
And they're really good at doing that. They're good at giving you the cinematic universe and the movies. Then you have the TV. You've got the comic books. And then, and I kind of get these separate on here. The cartoons, the animated universe is also different from the TV side.
You know what? You're right. I completely forgot about that. I mean, currently, as I mentioned before, off air, if you will. I'm watching the Justice League from 2001.
Yeah.
Because I missed it the first time around, and now that it's on Netflix, I mean, you can just binge watch that every day.
Exactly.
You know? But, like, again, completely different. However, you're introducing some of the same characters as you see in, like, Flash or Arrow or even now Supergirl with John Jones. So, I mean, I think that's actually kind of cool. You know, you got your own little happenings over there, while some of it kind of is – I don't want to say close to comic book. There are a few things twisted for the TV show and the kids, but you know, there's a few things in that series that are like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that, you know, and then so on with Flash, Arrow.
Exactly.
You can get where they're going with the certain character they are using.
The nice thing I've noticed is Marvel, as far as I remember, going all the way back, traditionally was a one universe company. Everything happens in the same place.
Yeah.
DC, since at least since the Silver Age, well, in general, they're mostly one. DC, since at least the Silver Age, has propagated the idea of the multiple universes.
Yeah.
And now, and that's why DC Comics fans, like with the TV, Marvel seems a lot of times that they're worried about people getting confused about, well, this happened in the movies, why isn't it in the comic books? Or why, if this happened in the comics, why isn't it in the movies? Or why isn't it on TV? DC, I don't think it has to worry about that, because for years, DC Comics fans have been used to Superman having six different versions and and knowing who's what, depending on where he's at.
It's funny you said that, because me and my mother just had that same conversation. I was talking to her about Superman, how there's always been these different Supermen they've used, but Marvel, if something's different, they're like, they might be confusing somebody. With DC, we've had these fans for so long. There's a certain demographic of people that will know what's going on with this, and you can always go back and play to them, make it for them, and then still also make it for your younger generation, and they'll read the books too.
Now, do you remember, let me see if I can find it here. Back in, I want to say, 93.
That's my birth year.
see, there you go. So
I remember 93, though.
In fact, I'm going to share a link to this image here. I have this. It is a fossil commemorative watch that has, at the time, the four Supermans.
Okay.
And they did this wonderful product promotion. There, if you can click on that. I still have the box and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
So you have Superman, Man of Steel, Superboy, and I don't remember the other one.
The Eradicator.
Okay.
From the one with the black in it is the Eradicator.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. But like,
who is back, by the way?
Yeah, you know, because Vernon, you had mentioned, you know, the six different Superman or whatever, you know. But like, you know, at that time, there was only four,
and they were all in the same universe at that point, because that was the death of Superman.
Exactly, that was to commemorate the death of Superman, and so I think, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, the DC fans have all gotten used to, you know, things being different with the different areas. You know, I just thought that, I don't know, I lost my point.
The fact that they can make something also for fans like that, like the watch, and they know what's different. Yeah, I think I know where you're getting at. if people can buy a watch like that, and they're all from different parts of Superman, that just means that no matter which kind of version you are going to make, there's going to be the fans out there that's going to buy it.
Exactly. People are not going to get confused by it.
Exactly. They know what's going on.
And I think that those little things are just what really drives it home for the fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I admire about that is that you can make something for the fans that you have so many different versions of the character, but you make it simple and good enough where we won't get too confused either. And we still have that nostalgia of, oh, they're doing another one, and we'll still love it. It's not like we're getting annoyed by it.
There, that, exactly. Yes, that.
I'm ringing the brain here. I think Martian Manhunter's training me here.
That's right. Well, why don't we go from there? And actually, some of that's going to get into this our Rebirth reviews for this week, because, like I said, there's some stuff that is actually a little confusing in this week's Rebirth. So, Mark, you said you haven't got a chance to get these, so we're going to spoil everything
on my
for
list
you.
To grab. You are going to spoil everything. I don't mind, because I will still read it for myself and form my own darn opinion.
Okay. So, Vernon, I know you said you had the first one. We had 8 comics come out this week that all had the Rebirth banner. Now, remember, Super Friends, we're actually reviewing all the ones with the actual Rebirth banner at the top. If Vernon and I have been talking, actually, after Rebirth is over, we're still going to have comic reviews. We just got to figure out which ones what we're going to do with it. Because we're having a good time doing this.
Yeah, and we love all the Rebirth they're putting out. So, if we keep getting our reviews up, we just got to say, hey, they're good, they're good, they're good.
So go ahead and go through Aquaman number 3, Vern.
Okay, so this leaves off from Aquaman issue number 2. They're still dealing with everything that happened down in Atlantis. Cannot think of this character's name. I was trying to find it, but I couldn't in time. He's one of the servants of Aquaman. Well, he's a Atlantean.
Okay.
But he does not like what Aquaman's doing. He's against it all, the whole peace thing with the human beings. He doesn't think that's a good idea. He wants it to stay Earth dwellers and sea dwellers completely separate. But Aquaman's basically right now the political figure of DC comic books. He's trying to cross over and tell the military that we're good, we're not bad. Who's ever doing this destruction? I had no idea about any of it. So him and Mira are talking. He's going to go to the White House. He's going to go right to the president and figure this out so we can have peace. But in the meantime, since he put Black Manta away, it's this character called Blackjack and her henchmen that want to recruit Black Manta and have him put his skills to good use. Because she even said the whole revenge killing with Aquaman, that's kind of stupid. You're not going to get anywhere with that. You need to work for a bigger cause. But in the meantime, from that, we can hurt Aquaman. We all hate him. So he takes down all her henchmen. She sees the fighting potential he has. And now she says, just time for you to meet the boss. And as the story goes on, Aquaman and Mira arrive to the White House. And as they arrive to the White House, something happened about 40 minutes ago of Atlantean taking down a ship from the military, or at least the government. And now they're telling Aquaman, we're going to have to arrest you, because they said right after they attacked them, this is from the Atlanteans themselves. And who's the king of Atlantis? Aquaman. So he's going to get blamed for all this. They put him in handcuffs. And Mira tells him, you expect me to stand by you while they take you away? He says, yes, that's exactly what I expect you to do. And then
the funny thing is, putting him in handcuffs would be kind of like putting Superman in handcuffs or any of the other ones. Isn't he strong enough to just break the cuffs if you wanted?
Well, that's why she was so upset. She's like, why are you letting them do this to you? You can break free. We can go back to Atlantis and we can figure this out. Don't let them arrest you. And he's like, no, this is the more peaceful route. We want to make peace with the Earth dwellers. Why would I fight in the White House? That does not look good.
Yeah.
So next issue, we'll figure out what's going to happen. But that was all for Aquaman number 1. Like I said, he's the political figure right now.
Okay.
I know we were talking about Green Arrow. Normally he's the political figure. Not anymore.
Well, we'll see in Hellblazer here in a little bit. There was some interesting political stuff in that one, too. But it was all background stuff. I found that it was really interesting. But I actually had Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 1, which is interesting because in the opening page is basically... What you got?
I'm gonna be talking with you around on this one. I'll let you go, but there's so much that happened in here that gave me nostalgia of the Killing Joke. Oh yeah, Mark, read Birds of Prey. Back around Birds of Prey Rebirth. This has a lot to do with the Killing Joke story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
It's interesting in this
totally
one that it starts off. What was that, Mark? Sorry.
Oh, I said I'm totally down for that.
Okay. But it starts off with Barbara on the rooftops, going around, and talks about how she's been learning and about scars and such, but the opening page on the last panel of it talks about how her past is behind her now. She's back from training overseas and ready to speed up. And it references, see Batgirl number 1. Well, Batgirl number 1 comes next week. Now, why would they put this out before the one that it's actually referencing? But it jumps around a little bit timeline-wise. But then it shows Batgirl basically attacking some thugs on a rooftop, fighting back and forth, talking about how she's doing it and all these things. It, basically, she's giving an internal monologue of the whole fight. Then after she beats up the last guy, she grabs his phone to find out who hired him to do these things. And the sender on the text that he got was Oracle. Now, this is Barbara Gordon that's doing all this.
Yeah, and I was going to say, from what it sounds like, somebody's taking her old name.
Exactly.
She was the only Oracle I would remember.
And in this one, she was Oracle at one point. So she's trying to find out from the thugs, okay, where'd this come from? How'd you get that? And they said they don't know. They just got a text from this person called Oracle. So then we go into flashbacks. And it goes flashbacks of basically her growing up to, with Commissioner Gordon, him not wanting her to be a police officer, although she idolized him growing up, then eventually training on her own aside from him so that she could actually still do what he and Batman are doing. And then it shows that she's working with Batman and Robin. All that history of that has still happened. Then they show a scene where she's putting coffee on the table. You hear not ding dong at the door. Turn around. You see a panel of Joker holding the gun. Then you see her getting shot. And then it skips to she was Oracle. She did get shot in that. According to this, she did get shot. She became Oracle because it talks about how she was able to move on to still be able to do what she was doing before just from a chair instead of actually out there doing it physically. She was doing it on the computer. So this is what's getting into her head. And it talks about how she had formed the Birds of Prey with Canary. And this is the only character they talk about in here is that her and Canary were the Birds of Prey. So Huntress wasn't in that Birds of Prey, I guess, at that point. But they talk about Canary and how Barbara went through an experimental procedure to get her to fix her back. And then after that, the Birds of Prey disbanded because Canary thought Barbara didn't need her anymore or something. And Canary ends up joining the rock band, which brings us to Canary where she's at now. And so Barbara knows that, wait a minute, something's going on here. Someone's using the Oracle name. I need to go get Dinah, and let's figure this out. So she finds out where the band... Dinah, at this point, is not part of the band anymore, but she knows that Dinah still watches their back and such. So she goes, finds Dinah, they go up to the clock tower, which Barbara has rented this clock tower to turn into a base, and she's been doing the research already. Now, it says, ask how is Barbara able to afford this place, and she says, Gordon Clean Energy is actually taking off, so she's actually making money also. In the business world. Then you get past the Doomsday ad for Snickers.
Oh, yeah, that was popping up everywhere.
That's the one thing that's kind of annoying about Rebirth is the center section is the same in every book for the entire month.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have minded if they would have put it out for a couple of them, but every book I got, it was the same thing. I'm like, oh.
Have you seen this one yet, Mark?
Yes.
I wouldn't think reading an advertisement was as bad as watching it over and over.
So. Yeah.
It's still funny, but after you've seen it five times, you're like, okay.
Yeah, it just gets old real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we get more scenes of Oracle, or not Oracle, of Barbara and Dinah talking back and forth, and Barbara's already figured out who it is that, not who's using the name Oracle, but who is actually hiring the guys that she was fighting against and stuff. And Dinah's like, well, what does it matter if someone's using the name Oracle? And Barbara makes the big fact that Oracle wasn't just a name for her. That was actually her. And what it is, this new Oracle is not providing information to the heroes to help out. She's actually selling information to the mobs. So it's like, if she has the amount of information that Barbara had as Oracle, this could be very bad.
Seriously.
So the next scene we go to is a church, and we see Huntress actually getting a confessional.
This is my favorite scene out of the whole book.
She's confessing how she left Spiral. She was matron of Spiral, the one in charge of the spy organization. She couldn't do that anymore. She's moving on. She's confessing about killing all these people and stuff. Then you find out as she walks away from the confessional that the people she needs to... she needs to continue to kill and take care of. Her new mission is to take with people like you. And here he was actually a mafia hitman posing as a priest. She's killed him in the center of the confessional. So she's like, well, I'm going to continue doing this. And you show that she has a list of hitmen from the mob.
Yeah. To go back on that confessing scene, that to me reminded me something straight off like a old, I don't know, Godfather movie. a Boondock Saint type movie when they go into confession stand. But if you're a bad guy, they don't care what you're doing, where you're at, they're gonna hit you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean hit you, they're gonna whack you, they're gonna kill you. So
the next one they had, we move on to the scene with Batgirl and Canary on top of the building checking out these guys that were I don't remember, were they gun running or drugs, one or the other.
I don't want to say gun running.
The mob guys are sitting there, and basically Canary and Barbara are taking them down looking for the one guy that has all the information. And then all of a sudden people start dying from these crossbow bolts.
But they don't have any crossbows.
They're not using crossbows. Then you turn around, you see Huntress standing on top of the car taking people out. Now here she's looking for the exact same guy they are, so they have to stop her to get to the question the other guy. What was his name? Pepperoni? No, that's... Diana calls him Pepperoni.
And Barbara's his name was Tomasi. Stop saying that.
Yeah. His name was Tomasi. So as they're fighting back and forth, he takes off. And then the final scene you see is the computer screens of Oracle and her telling everybody that, or talking that she knows, and now she knows everything, or everything you know, but she's the only one she's coming after, or wait, but the only one who knows what's coming. Ah, she knows everything they know, but she's the only one who knows what the next move is. We also find out that Huntress, since she was part of Spiral, knows exactly who Batgirl and Canary are. Knows their secret identities and everything else. Because anybody who read Dick Grayson, or what was it, Agent Grayson?
Agent Grayson.
Knows that Spiral has the information on everybody. So, but that was Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. And it will be continued on from there. Batgirl number one actually comes out next week. We'll find out more about that.
And I have the next one. For everybody when heard us talking about the whole, who is Gotham? Who's Gotham Girl? They seem like they're just copies of Superman and Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
No, they gave a backstory actually in this comic to let us know where they actually came from.
Okay.
Now.
I love this opening scene.
For a second, I thought this was a flashback into Batman's mind, but it wasn't. So, as a reader.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, so this was awesome. So this family, it's a husband and wife with their son. He looks like he's about 9, a little bit older than Bruce Wayne. Walking down the alley, and this guy at gunpoint getting ready to kill and rob them. While he's taking everything from them, he's threatening to shoot the mother and the father. Batman grabs him, knocks his head up against the wall, and I love the quote he told the family.
Yeah, we've been telling you guys, that the Super Friends, that this Batman is a little different than what we've had before. This is actually bringing back a little bit of the compassion to Batman, and actually, he's still dark, he's still Batman, but he's not as broody.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, like I said, I heard this from somebody else too, and I agree with them 100%. I haven't seen a Batman like this since the 90s version of the Kevin Conroy's.
Yeah.
Because Batman was dark, he was gritty, but you could still talk to him at the end of the day and maybe get a laugh out of him, or he'll make you chuckle, and he'll look like, what's so funny? It's like
just a little,
like him and Alfred. And he's just a little bit of a lighter tone than we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But the quote he used, he said, after they leave, you're going to be scared for a while, and it's fine to be scared. Everyone gets scared, because remember, all that means is everyone that gets the opportunity to fight their fear. So, he's basically telling them, if you're afraid of something, fight it. And after we know what Batman is, he took that fear that he had as a child and put it on other people.
Now, this next scene, how long did it take you to realize who it was that they were talking to?
Actually, let me see. I think I had to go through 4 pages and then go back and say, wait a minute.
So, you got the end of it?
Well, the thing was, before he went outside into the car, I had to read it back before they got to that. So, I still was like, who is this, before that happened. So, I was still in... I was still in the moment of, okay, this is Bruce Wayne undercover. So Bruce Wayne goes undercover and goes to the mansion of the people that he saved years ago. With their son was the only one there. Now, as he's talking to the mother and father, talking about that night and how it changed their lives, but really changed their child's life. The son especially. He couldn't sleep. But not so much because he was like Batman having a loss, but the fact that happened. So he's a little shooken up over it. But his sister... was not there. He has a younger sister. She goes in the room and cuddles with him and says, it's going to be okay. Everything's fine. And everybody gets scared. But still, Batman saved her family and saved her brother's life. So yeah. The parents were saying as they got older, they would go nursing homes, feed the elderly, take care of them. They would exercise and go to the gym, keep their body in training in good form. They would read everything and teach themselves just like Batman.
Reading is stuff like manuals on forensic evidence and how to do detective stuff. That type of thing is what they're reading.
Right. They're trying to become their own detective. And also they became EMTs or firefighters, and they were helping save people out of these burning buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are saying they gave them some money they transferred, but they don't know what they really wanted the money for.
Yeah, they were on some mission overseas working some mission work or something.
Yeah, and then we go back to Gotham, and you see Gotham Girl and Gotham flying around. Now there's this burning bridge, and they're going to have to go to work and save them because they're superheroes. And as Bruce Wayne is leaving the parents' apartment, one of the best – this is like James Bond right here. This wasn't even Batman. This was like some James Bond.
Well, hang on. Before we get to that spot, it was interesting how the parents have actually started to put together that as soon as their kids showed up back at home, all of a sudden Gotham and Gotham Girl start showing up and start helping Batman and doing these things that are phenomenally awesome. It's the type of stuff their kids – so they've pretty much put together that their kids are Gotham and Gotham Girl. And they think the guy they're talking to, they think is an FBI agent that was looking into the money transfer. That was the whole point of it. So the guy's talking about, like, I don't care who they are now. I just want to know where this money went.
Right.
But the way you know who it is that they're talking to was at the very end of it, he's saying goodbye. He's like, well, thank you for everything and all that. And the parents are asking, well, thank you, agent. And they couldn't remember what his name was. Well, his name was Agent Malone. And he said, most people just call me Matches. Yeah, anybody who's a Batman fan remembers Matches Malone has been the alias for Bruce Wayne since probably back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
When he's hiding in plain sight, trying to infiltrate bars and stuff, he just puts on the disguise and goes in as Matches Malone.
Yep. And he did a lot in the animated series, too.
Mm-hmm.
But as he's driving off, it looks like a white car. But as he's driving down the street, the car literally splits in half down the middle, and he's in his suit, and he's riding on a motorcycle. Then the car gets back into place. That was crazy. I never seen a Batman vehicle like that
before. Oh, yeah.
To go back into place. But anyways, he's going to help Gotham and Gotham Girl on this bridge, and Gotham's having some trouble with it, but he hears his sister saying it'll be okay, so they're helping each other. They really are a partnership. Before, when I said this was Bat, I thought this was Supergirl and Superman. Their connection is a lot closer than what the two cousins are.
Exactly.
So Batman gets there. He helps them with the bridge, and they get it patched up. And Batman, after he tells them, now remember, as I said before, that fear that you had in you, you can use that.
Mm-hmm.
So as they're flying up to Batman, he doesn't even talk to them at all. He literally looks at them and says, "It's good you see your." I'm sorry. It's good to see you out here, Gotham. And then he says, it's good to see what you've done with your fear. So he's basically let them know, if you guys remember that night, yeah, I was there to save you, and I know who you are.
Exactly.
It's funny.
The nice thing with this was it's showing now that for the first two issues, we weren't sure what the motivations are behind these two kids.
Yeah. No one knew why the heck they were helping or what.
Here they are, just kids trying to do the right thing and follow the example of what they remember from Batman when they were a kid.
And the thing is, like I said, she's there because Batman did save her family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something Batman would have loved even when he was growing or when his parents got killed. He wouldn't have cared who it was that saved him, just wants somebody to save his family. And the fact that he could go around telling other members of his family, hey, they saved us, they would be happy. That's his sister. But the brother saw exactly the same thing Bruce did. He was that close from becoming a Batman instead of, I say, a Superman, because he's...
Exactly.
The style of him is still different from Batman. Picture Superman putting on a Batman costume. This is what I feel like Gotham is. So he helped save that boy's life. And also, this reminds me more so of Dick Grayson, the way his attitude is.
Yeah. Well, what I was thinking, when you said Superman, that's about perfect, because I've always said this for a long time with Superman's character, that Batman, his parents died, he has motivation to do this. And most of your like Marvel characters, something happened in the background that drove them to become a hero. Right. Superman is a hero because it's the right thing to do. His parents taught him right and wrong. He said, "Hey, I have all these powers. This is what I can do to help people." So he's a hero because it's the right thing to do. Not because of something happened, not because of anything else, because he was taught this.
And that was a good thing about him being an orphan at such a young age. He didn't have any memories of his parents for so his biological parents for so long, but he was still getting raised by the Kents.
Exactly.
So he never felt that loss like what Batman felt.
Mm-hmm. So we do find out, though, that the bridge is collapsing because a suicide bomber actually set off a bomb on the bridge. And there was a quote that the suicide bomber, we're back to again of, let me find it here. The bomber said before it went off, where'd it go?
Yeah, I'm trying to find
it. It was about
the
monster men again. Now, remember, we've seen earlier that something happened with the monster men. I got to find where it's at in here. There it is. The monster men are coming. Now, remember, the guy who stabbed himself in the throat in Gordon's office said the same thing. The monster men are coming. That's why he let Solomon Grundy out. Remember?
Yep.
So something with the monster men is happening. These people are doing this.
And I have a theory about that, too.
Well, so do I, because we see the villain at the end of the last one and at the end of this one.
Yeah, well, the villain again at the end of this is, once again, Hugo Strange. And he introduces himself. And he also says he has this another partner or henchman with him called Psycho...
the Psycho Pirate.
Pirate? Yeah. But now, remember in the last issue, he was talking to somebody... and he called him Yes, Doc Strange. And what do you say? Tell me how this guy's facial expressions are. Is he happy? Is he sad? Is he depressed? I'm thinking Psycho Pirate is that character that he
possibly,
was
talking to. And maybe he can pass his emotions to others. Because it says he's the master of all emotions.
Yeah, and I think that's why he asks him, are you sad? Are you happy? Are you depressed? So I'm really thinking of setting this up. So for right now, Hugo Strange is going to be the main villain for the first couple of issues of the Batman Rebirth. Which makes sense. And plus, Monster Man, do you remember from Gotham and what he did in his original comics? He made monsters.
Yeah. So the Monster Men are coming. Well, Hugo Strange is probably helping make the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, the next one's Green Arrow, number 3. You want to cover that one, too?
Yeah. Now, guys, this is Green Arrow. This is Ollie back. Oh, man. The other Green Arrow books were great, too. Don't get me wrong. But this one right here is letting me know they're going on the right track and bringing back the old 80s... Green Arrow. So from the last issue, he was trying to get back into his building, the one that somebody took over while he's been gone on his little hiatus. So he goes through there, knocks out some security guards. He goes in there and he sees what are they called? Are they called the Underdwellers, I think? And he has to fight them off. And in the meantime of him doing that, we go back to see John Diggle. Now, if John Diggle was this much of a bad butt in the TV show, I mean, he's great in a TV show, but this John Diggle is like a hitman. This guy goes into a church, like we talked about with Helena. He pulls his gun out on the priest and says, take me to wherever the guides are. I came here and tracked everything down. So he tilts down the little the cross, and they go down there. He talks about the 9 circles, and he's threatening to kill the priest still. But as he's telling him, he said, my name's John Diggle, and I operate a private security force. And a few weeks ago, I was guarding somebody, and they got shot. I went through his phone, and I got here. Now we go back to Arrow, and he's still fighting off all the guys. But we see the guy Cyrus and his mask. He takes it off. He talks to him, and he's talking about how he trusts him as the businessman, and all along, you're the man behind the mask. And now he's telling him, you'll pay for what you've done. Right in there, when Green Arrow's getting ready to shoot him, who is that? It comes out. Shadow comes out and tries to stop him. So now they're fighting. And if you guys remember, Shadow is the reason why Green Arrow went into his little hiatus. Anyway, he was in that, 3-week coma. So they all come flying, crashing out the window. Then we go back and we see Black Canary interrogating somebody, trying to get some more information. Everybody in this book is interrogating somebody, trying to get information, all for the same cause. I mean, they all need to get Team Arrow back together. And by the end of this, we see another new character called Dante, and his face looks hideous, guys. His face like something out of Hellraiser. this guy's scary to look at. But then Emiko comes out, Green Arrow's younger sister, and she's talking, and they have her, I don't want to say held captive, but they are using her against her will. She says, get her hands off me, I don't want to be touched that way. And she's saying, what's the one way to get to Green Arrow, to really hurt him, to get him come out? She said, it's me. And then there's her. And the her is Black Canary. So they already have Emiko basically hostage, and now they might do something to Green or Black Canary to get Green Arrow to come out and actually fight them, or at least to get him work for their advantage. And we'll find all that out in the next issue of what they have planned for Green Arrow.
Awesome.
And I just want to say it's great to see him have his goatee back. So I want to help you, but I'm losing.
Yeah, Arrow, I may have to start reading some of these, the Arrow, because Arrow, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman are the only ones really I haven't been picking up. Yeah. But Arrow said, I was afraid it was going to get a lot more political than what it seems like it is.
No, like I said, that is definitely Aquaman. Now, I was going to say, since you don't like the whole political thing, you might not like Aquaman, but Green Arrow, this is Green Arrow from like the TV show.
That's what I've noticed.
100-fold. Yeah, there's a lot of things that's happening in there. It's like, man, this is literally like the TV show, the Black Canary doing her thing. John Diggle's a big part of this book now.
Yeah.
Before, he was just a minor character, but now he's doing great in this. And also, Green Arrow's back to being what we saw from like the first season of the Arrow. You would think, actually, you would really think Kevin Smith has been writing these books. This is how good they are.
Okay. Well, I may have to go back and get them then. So, we got a couple books left. Next one's actually Green Lanterns, number 3. Now, this one's actually really interesting. Remember, Atrocitus, Bleez, and the rest of the Red Lanterns are planning on using Earth as the new home of the Red Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
That's their plan. So we start off with Simon and Jessica flying, trying to figure out where the Red Lanterns are. And you see Atrocitus, Bleez, and some psycho Red Lantern cat. In the middle of the field.
I wish I could remember.
I don't remember his name.
He's one. Actually, if you ever get a chance, guys, read his backstory. I'll give you his name in a second. Keep reading, but read his backstory. He probably has one of the saddest backstories out of any DC character I've seen, and he's a cat.
Well, really, this book is about Bleez, though. Really.
Yeah, it is. It evolves around her.
So,
the more you get into there, you'll see why.
Well, they've landed outside or in. Right outside of St. Louis, they've decided this is where they're doing what they need to do. So, of course, Simon and Jessica have showed up to stop them. We have a scene of Simon and Jessica and talking about why he actually still uses a gun. And he talks about how he doesn't really trust the ring yet. He knows when the ring finally does fail him, he's got backup. He's got his gun.
Yeah, he reminds me of Jon Stewart to a certain extent with that.
Well, at that point, Bleez attacks.
To a certain extent, yeah. Oh, and I'm sorry, the cat's name is Dexter.
Okay. Well, at that point, Bleez attacks. Now, the interesting part is, anybody who doesn't know, Bleez is the Red Lantern. She's got these bone-looking wings that come out of her back. Okay? That actually matters for later.
Yeah, I was going to say, the best way to put this is she looks like a hell angel.
Exactly. Well, she starts attacking. She takes down Simon. She takes down Jessica, fighting them off. They can't really do much. She throws Jessica through a building, and they're destroying downtown St. Louis.
Just like you're supposed to do when you have a superhero barrel.
Exactly.
Right, of course. That's how it's supposed to be.
But she grabs Simon and sees that actually he's got rage in him. So she's tempting him and telling him how there's a powerful beast inside him. He's snarling from the shadow like a beast. Or something powerful inside of you, snarling from the shadows like a beast. It has been part of you since the day you were born. Call it by its name, rage, let it out. Then we skip over to Dearborn, Michigan, where Simon's family and everybody's from. And they walk in, they come up to the house, and the door's open for some reason. They walk in, and they're saying his name's Nazar, I believe, is the husband's name. Sarah is the wife. And they're like, we need to call Simon. Something's weird. And she's like, no, Simon's busy saving the world. We can take care of a burglar. So they come in, and all of a sudden you see from the first issue of Green Lanterns, the really beat-up Guardian. I don't know who it is, but he's sitting at the table, and it tells them straight up, greetings. I've traced the energy signature from a power ring to this building. I need to speak with the Green Lantern who lives here immediately. And for the sake of the whole universe, I pray it's Hal Jordan. Or that new guy, what's his name, John something? So this guy's been out of the loop for a minute. He's been out of the loop for a minute because for him, the new guy is John Stewart.
Yeah, if that's the case, there's been several different Lanterns since then. There must have been like 4 or 5 different Lanterns since then.
Is that, and he even says at the end of his thing, he says, I may or may not have been out of the loop.
So, but here's the thing that really got me with this. He's a Guardian, but he walks in the front door.
Exactly.
I was thought, I don't know, I just thought that was funny. Like, there's no other way he could have, heck, he could have went through the ceiling to me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, the sister and brother-in-law look at him, look at each other and say, maybe now it is time to call Simon. So
I think it'd be a good idea.
Then we get a flashback scene of all the different pain and things that have made Simon angry throughout the years. The way he was treated, because he's Muslim. So growing up, not fitting in, people making fun of him for what he believes, all the stuff they've had to deal with because of that, and all the tragedy and stuff that's happened in his life, how his brother almost died in a car wreck, and all these other things. She's basically, Bleez is bringing all this up, trying to remind him of all of his rage and how much there is. Then and Simon is giving a monologue through the whole thing, talking about how he used the ring to save Nazar when he, from the car wreck that they were in. And it says, the ring didn't save him, I did. The ring, it found something inside me that I didn't know was there. I can find it again, my strength, my willpower. Then he yells at her, no, I won't give in. And then the ring tells you, willpower levels are spiking. Then the entire next page is green, except for Bleez. And he's blasting her with just a raw, sheer willpower.
Willpower, mm-hmm.
And blast it says her. How she can be saved. So,
That whole scene, I'd never seen a Green Lantern do anything like this. The fact that he let Simon be the first one was... That at least you know how much willpower he has behind him. Like I say, he reminds me of another Jon Stewart.
Exactly. Well, the fun thing is, he burns out and passes out after that. And you see, then they show a scene of him laying beside a blue-skinned angel.
Yes, a blue-skinned angel.
And I recognize the species. I don't remember who it is. Wasn't Azazel or something like that, was another character from DC that was the same race? There was another character that was this blue-skinned angel race. It's one of the alien races, obviously. Then he finally wakes up and finds this is Bleez. And for some reason, she can't find her rage.
Yeah,
she
says, her wings are back.
Her regular angel wings are back. She's in her internal monologue basically is telling how Atrocitus told her there's no way to get rid of the rage. Once you're Red Lantern, you're Red Lantern forever. But she remembers everything she did as Bleez. And so she gets ready to actually grabs a shard of glass and gets ready to stab herself, saying that I can't deal with this. I did all this. I can't find my rage. I'm not a Red Lantern anymore. I need to end my life. And Simon stops her from that. As she is, she's starting to get a little angry. You see the red start to come back on her a little bit. But it talks about how he needs to let her do this. She can't come back from... There's no coming back from what she's did. And the next scene is a whole scene of him talking to her back and forth of, I've done these crazy things that I couldn't do anymore. Or that I've done plenty of things that are unforgivable, but I'm still a Green Lantern. I can still make the future better than what my past was, is basically the whole point of it. And then out of nowhere, they get smashed by a copying machine or something. And here, Jessica finally is returning to the battle, not knowing that the battle was over, and smashes Bleez to get her away from Simon.
Thus, this is where I was like, Jessica, you annoyed me for one time out of this whole book.
Well, this makes Bleez all ticked off, and all of a sudden, she's back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now, because of that, the one thing they did find out was the whole point of all of this. Bleez, when she was still, when she was healed, she told Simon that she was just a diversion. The real thing you have to deal with is that hell tower that they're building. If that thing finishes what it's doing, the Atrocitus is going to plant what he calls the rage seed into the planet and turn the planet into the Red Lantern homeworld. But then all of a sudden she's back to being Bleez and she takes off because she needs to hide, figure out what's going on, how did this happen, and all of that. And then you get Simon and Jessica arguing back and forth, which we've had a lot of, because of all this happening. Then you get warning from the ring that rage levels are spiking again, and so they have to take off to go find the Hell Tower, basically. As they're doing that, they're getting ready. They find the Argus agents that had chased them away from the Hell Tower before are all passed out on the ground. And Simon gets blasted from behind out of nowhere, and you find that Jessica is being infected by the rage. That's the last panel. Yeah. So it looks like we have two Green Lanterns fighting against each other, one of them being affected by the Red Lantern energy.
Yeah, this is where I would say she needs to. I know she's a rookie and she needs to relax and learn. Even though Simon hasn't been Green Lantern for long, he definitely has more experience than what she does.
Mm-hmm.
I am so gonna have to pick this up.
Oh yeah,
the Green Lantern's book is it's awesome, and also Hal Jordan Green Lantern's really good too.
One of the nice things that they've done with Rebirth though is when they drop the price point, so where you can actually buy. I've been able to buy almost all of the Rebirth titles every week for $20 or less total.
Nice.
Which $20 a week is a lot for comics when you haven't been buying
compared
them.
Compared to when you had that $3.99 on it,
yeah,
it still saves you a lot of money.
Is what would have been $40 any other time.
Yeah, I remember I would buy three books, maybe four, and I would sometimes come around $16.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, now I'm buying like 8 and 9, sometimes 10 books, depending on like the Hanna-Barbera's that come out each week. I'll get those along with everything. It's cost me about $27. It's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I just got double, and I'm not paying double. It's good. They lowered down to $2.99.
So next up, we have Justice League number one. You want to cover this one, Vernon?
I was saying, do you want to cover this one together? Since we were going back and forth there, I think we took each other's with Batman Green Arrow.
Oh wait, yeah, you didn't get to this one, did you?
I actually did. I was reading this one. I want to say probably about 10 minutes ago, skimming through it.
Okay. Well, this one confused me in the beginning anyway.
I'm hoping the movie is like this book, because this was really, really done well. And I did say the first Justice League number one I didn't really like as much, because I guess they were setting up. But I say once they get a story planted with Justice League and you read each issue, it gets better and better as the story goes by.
Yeah. Well, this one's interesting. It starts off, opening panel is Wonder Woman flying into a battle. Now, the weird thing is she's
crashing into a battle.
Well, crashing into a battle, but she's carrying a lightning bolt. It looks like Zeus's lightning bolt.
Yeah, I was going to say, her from New 52, she's a lot more in touch with the gods of Greek gods than she was previously.
Okay. So it's just weird that seeing her carrying around a lightning bolt, that's just, it's weird.
That,
I don't know.
That looks more like something Captain Marvel would do.
Yeah. So, well, actually, we do get him later on in another book, but...
Yeah, we're almost there.
But she's basically in a war zone, smashing things, and all of a sudden, this giant earthquake happens or something that destroys the entire area she's in, and the one guy looks at her and says, "What have you done? You killed all of us." And she said, "It wasn't me." So something, an actual earthquake destroyed it.
Did I ever say exactly where she was at? Because they tell the readers where everybody else was, but I don't know where the city she was.
Give me half a second. No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I think later on, Cyborg says that she was in Eastern Europe or something like that.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Okay.
So, but, it's translated from Russian earlier, the people that are fighting her, so she's in Russia somewhere.
Okay. But meanwhile, in New York, you have Cyborg. He felt the earthquake, too, and things are coming through the New York subway tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a train coming, and there's all these people's cars that fell through the ground. They're still alive, and he's escorting them out of the car, getting them to safety, but they're still in the train tracks. But there's a train coming. So Victor says, "I'm going to put my old football player ways to good usage." So he stops the train just as he was on the field.
Exactly.
And he's also getting from his just the mother box technology he had from Darkseid and his system are saying more energy information is incoming. Then we transfer to San Francisco and we see Flash helping save the day. This little girl can't find her mother. The mother can't find her daughter. The girl is dropping water. As she's dropping her bottle of water, Flash picks her up before the bottle of water falls to the ground and takes her back to her mom. I thought that was pretty awesome.
See, for me, this is what Flash should look like. The only thing I haven't liked with Flash comics is the art style. I'm not a fan of the art style of Flash. Water.
Yeah, and some people, I heard them saying when people complain, like they don't see the problem with it. I don't hate it, but after honestly seeing the Flashpoint drawings, I don't want to see any other Flash drawn but like the Flashpoint. And this is actually like the Flashpoint costume, the Flashpoint style.
Yeah.
It's not the whole water print thing. I don't like that for Flash.
Well, the one thing,
Green Arrow or Aquaman, that's fine. But Flash is different.
Yeah. Well, the one thing we skipped a little bit was that the second panel, right after Wonder Woman does that, we get a newscaster saying that the entire world is going through these natural disasters, and they're actual natural disasters, typhoons, earthquakes, flooding, all this stuff out of nowhere. I mean, this is of biblical proportion size.
Yeah, and I did. I actually skipped this page when I was just doing the review right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you got the Green Lanterns helping save the day. And what city are they in?
They're in Beijing.
Okay, so they're over there. Helps. Oh, because that's why him and I think them and Aquaman were kind of close.
Well, yeah, Aquaman's down in Atlantis because the same thing that's happening on Earth is or up on the land is happening in Atlantis. So it's Aquaman's trying to save the day in Atlantis.
Yeah, like Ken said, everywhere some natural disaster is happening.
So we have the and then after Aquaman saves Atlantis, you go back to the Lanterns. They've now gone to Hong Kong, which is about to get wiped away by a giant tsunami. So they stop, and the nice thing, this ties into the Green Lanterns also.
Yep.
Because in Hong Kong, Jessica still can't make constructs yet. She has figured out the willpower part of that and how to actually build constructs with a ring. So, Simon creates a wall to break the, wave, but as he does, you see, people quoting the Green Lantern, green light, stolen light, our light, and their rings start to fizzle out. It's like they're pulling the power away from the lanterns. Then you go to Russia where Wonder Woman is, and the people are chanting things about her. Mm-hmm. And she seems to be losing powers. These people, it's almost like zombies are coming after her. You get to San Francisco with Barry, and you have people chanting there, and all of a sudden he loses his speed. He can't run anymore.
Yep.
You get the... Then they just show real quick a cyborg. Then they show Batman, and Batman's saying something weird's going on here in Gotham. And then he says, "What's he doing?" And the cyborg asking, "What, Superman? He's everywhere." And then you see that in the footage, Superman has been all over the world doing things.
And this is why I hope they also put in the movie, by the way, too. Show how much technology Victor Stone Cyborg can go down to. He knows what's happening from all the video feeds of Superman on people's cell phone camera are coming into his eye. And it's just like, so Cyborg has that much power. If it's anything being filmed, he can still get the transmission for that. I thought that was pretty cool. And that's how I've seen Superman saving the day everywhere.
Exactly. And then most of the rest of the book is the same scenes of people taking the powers away from the heroes by this weird chanting, except that the next scene in Gotham is some alien-looking ship has crash-landed in the middle of Gotham, and these bug creatures come out and start attacking. And he tells Vic that you need to get a hold of the government, we need to quarantine Gotham. But then we go back to...
And the way he catches that bug before it attacks him was pretty awesome, too. I was like, there's classic Batman.
Then we go back to Aquaman. He's dealing with the people, the zombie-looking people, and what they're saying. And they're getting ready to attack him. As the city is being pulled into a rift in the ocean floor, you go back to Eastern Europe and Wonder Woman having to fight off these zombies. They're attacking her now. And that goes to the end of the book, and it actually says they call themselves the Kindred in that, right before that. And it says, "You're a pretender god. You are the one who has no knowledge of us, of who we really are." Then she says, "The Kindred, well, hear me now, Kindred. I have friends, and we're coming for you." So it's basically setting up that they're going to have to get together and figure out what in the world is going on to people all over the world. It's happening everywhere in the world at once.
Mm-hmm.
Then that was Justice League. We got two more left for this week. We have Superman... Which actually, I'm loving the story in Superman because this is the story of Superman teaching Jonathan Kent how to use his powers and what's going on with his powers.
Yeah.
And
it's really like just a father and son bonding moment every time I read this book.
Well, the nice thing is, Mark, you'll enjoy this. We were talking earlier about the four Supermen. The Eradicator's back in this.
Really?
Yes. So we saw
him. Oh, I just got excited.
And we actually learned the motivations of the Eradicator in this universe. Because it was a little different than what we had before. Remember in the end of the last issue number 2 of Superman, Jonathan fell out of a tree and hit his head and actually is knocked out unconscious. Which is weird because he's been getting his powers. He has some invulnerability and stuff. So Lois and Clark are trying to figure out why did his invulnerability not work at this point. So they go to the Arctic Circle to the New 52 Superman's Fortress of Solitude. And to figure out what in the world's going on.
Interesting.
Yes. There's two fortresses actually on this world now because our Superman has actually built one in a mountainside somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But Lois asks him straight up, why didn't we just go to that one? And he says he doesn't have the Kryptonian tech in that one. That one is what he built for himself. This one was built with Kryptonian tech. And the one thing I did not know was in the New 52. Vernon, did you know about the pet?
Oh, Crypto?
Yeah.
They go in. Crypto was there.
Crypto the Super Dog is in the fortress. Wearing the cape. But as they're doing that, they have this... Huh?
I would say Mark's little side. I was like, I don't know if that was a good one or a bad one.
I'll let you guys decide.
Well, by the time we get done telling you what happens in this book, you'll decide, too.
Yeah. But,
the walk-in... The 52 thing for me was a little rough.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I stopped reading DC comic books for New 52. There are certain things I would pick up, but as far as like continuing the whole story, I didn't really care for because there's so many things that was just screwed up.
That's one thing with Rebirth. They have done what they said they were going to do.
They did fix it.
They have fixed a lot of things.
A lot. Almost everything, really. I'm just waiting for to see some of the characters return, but honestly, I think they fixed it. It's got duct taped up, some super glue, and looks brand new. But
oh, sorry guys, I was distracted by the chat.
Oh, it's okay. I was looking at the comic book with Eradicator, and Eradicator looked kind of scary.
Oh yeah, well he hasn't fully formed yet. You find out they walk in, and Eradicator is sitting there petting Crypto, but he's like amorphous, stretched out, weird looking because he hasn't fully formed yet. Then he finds out we've been waiting for you, Kal-El, and he's always talking in as a we. We have traveled long and far to save us. And he says, what in the world do you do? Because remember, Superman remembers the original Eradicator from back when... we've talked about this before in the Superman books. We've seen almost all four of the Superman, or it seems like, are coming back slowly. Because Superboy, we know, is going to be in coming up in the next month. We're going to see him. Eradicator is here. We've not seen the Cyborg Superman yet, but we know he's coming because he's in the preview pictures you see from Supergirl, he's in those. I want to know what's happening to Steel. Is he going to be in this?
Yeah, same here. I'm waiting for Steel, too. Steel's one of my favorite.
He's the only one that's going to be missing so far.
He's one of my favorite Superman characters in his world, so hopefully we get to see. Well, there's a couple characters I'm waiting for, but we'll get those at some point.
Yeah. Well, you get the Eradicator talking back and forth. The Superman immediately attacks the Eradicator because that's just the way it was back when he was there. Same thing is kind of what happened with Luthor.
That's what I was just about.
Remember when he first saw Luthor in the suit, he got all ticked off because Luthor's a villain.
Like enemy. Yeah, enemy. He remembers what's happened, but this is a different world.
So he says, why do you look like the Eradicator? He says, because we are the Eradicator. So they start fighting. He's here to save Krypton, is what he says. You have to trust him. And he said, when Superman says, I don't think so, he says, leaves you no choice, and he beats down Superman and smashes him with an energy beam. He says he has no choice but to incapacitate him until he can convince him. So Clark yells at Lois and Jonathan to get to the back of the fortress so that if this gets destroyed in the front half, it's not going to take them out. So as they're fighting, smashing walls, stuff starts falling. Then the roof starts to collapse over John and Lois. And out of nowhere, the Eradicator catches the roof above them and saves them.
The Eradicator saved John and Lois.
Wow.
So then the... Superman's like, wait a minute, he saved them. And so they find out that for some reason the Eradicator's not there to destroy all of them. And then the next thing you see, the John, Lois, and Clark, and John's in a pod-looking thing getting scanned to find out what's going on with his DNA. Crypto is standing beside him, and the Eradicator's behind him. And they're saying how it's weird that if it wasn't for them with John... he would never do this, but he's actually turned his back on the Eradicator. The Eradicator's just chilling behind him.
Yeah, he's not seeing him as a threat right now.
So they're finding out what's going on, what's the physiological problems with John's body, and they're finding out that there's a lack of consistency in his power that's actually scaring them. And then it says how his body is actually adapting to his unique genome of human and Kryptonian together. And speaking of adapting, why are you... speaking of adapting, he looks down at Crypto and says, why are you here and wearing the house and emblem of L on your chest? Oh, no, he's talking to Eradicator. And Eradicator says he's here because he's fated to be here after assimilating some personal objects from in the fortress, which was the other Clark's glasses and some other things. He was able to wear the symbol proudly, but before... we get into the backstory of this Eradicator. This Eradicator was created by Zod back on Krypton to seek out and arrest Kryptonian lawbreakers that were on General Zod's list by whatever means were necessary. He was more of a robot then than an energy being. Now, he was doing all this, and then he had a mission that took him to the far reaches of the Kryptonian system as the planet was destroyed. So all of a sudden, everything his mission was taken away from him. He can't cover any of that now. But he did see a rocket ship leaving Krypton. So he traced the rocket ship, came to Earth, found the fortress, and then he searched the planet. Then the first sign of Kryptonian DNA he found was when John actually had a drop of blood in the Arctic that landed on the ground. And he recognized that it was Kryptonian, but it was tainted by human DNA also. And remember, he's trying to keep the purity of Krypton and actually bring back Krypton. That's his job. So he's talking about how in order to truly bring back the Kryptonian species, they have to propagate, but to preserve the purity of the race, the genome needs to be uncorrupted. They have to start with Superman's offspring and find a way to bolster the Kryptonian genome to subsume his, to take over the human one. So Superman looks at him and says, wait a minute, you're talking about eradicating half of my son? He says, yes. Which Crypto looks up like, wait a minute, that's not right. But only the impure half. First thing he has to do, first step of cleansing is ingestion. And all of a sudden, he hits John with this giant yellow beam. And as he does, Crypto jumps in the way, and he ends up eating Crypto. The beam was supposed to ingest John, I guess. And from there, he would do whatever it needs to do to purify him and put him back out. Well, he ends up eating Crypto instead. At which point, Superman smashes the Eradicator, is fighting back and forth. Because remember, John mistakenly killed the family cat with his heat vision. Now he's seen Crypto the Superdog die in front of him. And as Superman and the Eradicator are fighting, John picks up Crypto's cape, stands up, and you see a really ticked off boy with glowing red eyes walking towards his dad and the Eradicator. And that's the end of the book.
Oh, wow.
So that's where Superman is at right now. And the next one is one I know Vernon has been waiting for a long time for this one. You got the next one, Vernon. This is the last one for this week's Rebirth. I know it's been probably been kind of boring for you sitting there, Mark, but what do you think so far?
No, actually, it's been kind of fascinating because, again, I haven't picked these up yet. So I'm just kind of like listening, but yet trying to keep an open mind so that when I do read it, I can, you know. But no, I'm kind of excited, and that right there just kind of gave me chills.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I've seen the Eradicator back, and the way John was holding that cape was, man.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, guys, so, being fans out there of John Constantine, he is now back in his new Hellblazer Rebirth, and this was awesome. Yeah.
The art style in this one, though, is a little weird, too. It's almost very cartoony, almost.
Yeah, the other comic book they're putting out, Constantine, was even more cartoony than this, so I love this style a lot better. So in here, John Constantine's in London, of course, some years ago. And it's this character called Laughing Boy. And he says, as he's talking to him, he says, funny that you say that. And as he's talking, by the way, there's a lot of cursing in here, but they blotted out.
Yeah, I love the way they did that, too. They used a bunch of like little skulls to replace letters.
Exactly. As John, he holds him up and tells him there's thousands of lives on your hands. And John Constantine's just making a joke out of all this. And the guy's saying, how dare you do this, John? He lights up a cigarette and continues to talk. And then back in New York City, John Constantine, finds a friend in this, I don't know, it looks like an airport. And there's a lot of people in there. He gets picked up by Chaz, his best friend, the guy that drives a taxi. Mark, have you ever seen the show? I just want to ask that. Have you ever seen John
Constantine? Yeah, absolutely. I love the show.
Okay, so you know who Chaz is.
The nice thing with this is a lot of the stuff from the show are in the book here, so you can actually see it. You're not lost if you didn't know, if you knew the show.
Right. And then they go back and he talks about how he's been a good friend with him. They went to the pub and everything. He used to drink, smoke together. And then back in a village in Kent, Chilham, Kent, it's this girl named Macy. Is it Macy? Yeah. I'm sorry, Mercy. She's preparing to get ready to go out to America. And in so, we go back to seeing what John Constantine is doing. He's drawing some type of pendant on the ground so he can, I think he's trying to summon the demon. And he does, and at this, Laughing Boy lifts himself up, picks John up from his legs. John cuts himself, lets the blood reach in the pendant. And then we open up another gateway. And if I'm correct, there's about 8,000 lives at stake now. And John Constantine just put everybody's life up or there like that.
Yeah, this guy's trying to collect all the souls in London. So I think it was 8 million.
And he's talking to him. And like I said, John Constantine's making this one big joke, like he's going out to the grocery store. And it's like, oh, I forgot that I was supposed to get oranges. Eh, it's okay. These are lives at stake, John. This isn't some game. So Macy's going up there. She gets on her motorcycle. And there's a tower in London. Now, this is really connecting John Constantine inside the DCU. I said DCU. And the other rest of the DC universe. There's Captain Marvel, Shazam, if you want to call him, and Wonder Woman. And Swamp Thing, all in the same place. Now, if you know the background from Swamp Thing, there was the Dark Justice League with John Constantine. And also with Shazam and Wonder Woman, they are the Justice League. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're trying to figure out what's going on here, Swamp Thing comes up and talking about everything that's happening, how Constantine's doing his job, let him do what he's doing, don't interrupt, he's got this, this is something way out of their league. But the funny thing is, they're also mystical characters. One Roman and Shazam, but this is still way out of what they deal with. He's a little bit darker. John Constantine deals more with the dark arts than what they do, just magic.
Yeah.
And as they're talking, they're waiting to see how many lives are actually going to be at stake and what's going to happen. Then he brings up his father. And as John said, cry me a river. That worthless drunk, I don't want to even say the world's better off without him, to be honest. So you can see a little bit of how John Constantine and his family life is.
Yeah.
And then he starts bringing up the young girl that went to hell, and you know that always strikes a chord with John.
Which is interesting. I didn't realize that's actually the same one that he's dealing with in the TV series. They talk about Astrid.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, that's why I really love the Constantine show a lot better than the movie. This was John Constantine on the small screen. This was exactly what was in the books on TV. And also while I'm reading this, had you guys ever read a comic book and say there's a certain movie or TV show you've seen and the character's voice was so well done, when you read the book now, all you can hear is that character speaking in your head?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Matt Ryan, that's all I can think of, or all I can hear is his voice while I'm reading this book. That's all that pops in my head.
Yeah.
And anyways, to keep going on, Laughing Boy and John are having a little bit of disagreement, but Laughing Boy is called Laughing Boy for a reason, because now he's laughing at John's misery. He can see the hurt that he pulled out of him. But as he's doing that, Mercy comes up, and
Mercury.
She says, thank you, Mercury, not Mercy, sorry. She comes
Mercy
up
was
and
Luthor's
says,
assistant.
That's why I think I kept saying, like, I'm like, there's a DC character that worked with somebody. I just seen Justice League, Dawn of Justice again. Not Dawn, Justice League, but Batman vs. Superman, sorry about that. But anyways, she says, you can do all this like this. Like I said, the whole book has like these little stars or skull heads when they're cursing. And he said, let me introduce you to Laughing Boy. And then she already knows all about him. The thing about Mercury is she is a telepath. She's a psychic. So everything that Laughing Boy was thinking, he wasn't telling John, she already seen it. And in the next panel, we go back. I think this was somewhere years ago in London. John, he broke the fourth wall here.
Well, no. What it is this whole time, this demon's had a curse over the city. And John's trying to break the curse, but John has no power over this demon because he doesn't know the demon's name.
Right.
When you know a demon's name, you gain the power over that demon, I guess. Well, now
that
he has the demon's name.
That kind of sounds something like Rumpelstiltskin.
Well, the next panel you see, that last page, is all of a sudden the curse is broken and everything's back to normal.
Back to normal. But didn't John break the fourth wall at the very, very beginning of this book?
Yes, he does.
And this is what I love about this. He says, if Mercury hadn't shown up, would I really have stood a while 8 million souls were being condemned to hell? Well, that's something you're going to have to stick around and find out for yourselves. Or not, because, quite frankly, at the end of the day, do I strike you as the guy that really gives a, you know what?
Yeah.
And the book ends just like that, while John Constantine's lighting up his cigarette and smoking.
So that was awesome. This week's Rebirth titles.
Yeah, and like I said, I really love how John Constantine is now with the rest of the DC Universe. I mean, he always has been, but the fact that Wonder Woman and Shazam, two of the biggest Justice League members, strongest Justice League members, came to deal with this, but Constantine took it before they could even get to it.
Yeah,
that shows you how good John Constantine is.
So, and then that's, like I said, that's all of the Rebirth titles for this week. I think we really, I mean, just a minute. We really only have one more thing to do today, don't we?
Yep, and we need to go somewhere like a...
And as we do every week, our comic shop pull list is brought to you by the Shazbots. Go check them out on iTunes and on Facebook. Let them know the DC Superpowers sent you. That was their song, Comic Shop. Now, for this week, Mark, you said you're going to get in on the pull list with us, right?
Sure, why not?
I actually put names by everybody's picks here.
Excuse me.
Actually have 9 books coming next week, which makes it perfect. It gives us 3 each. I think I'm going to start off with everything for next week. The first book we have from next week from Rebirth is Action Comics number 960. Only 40 left till we hit that magic number 1,000. It says, Path of Doom, Chapter 4. Wonder Woman joins the fight. But even her added might can't slow down Doomsday's rampage. As Superman comes face to face with the woman who once loved him, the Man of Tomorrow must also wrestle with the reappearance of Clark Kent. Now, the art was done by Tyler Kirkham, and it was written by Dan Jurgens. So that's Action Comics. What do we got? Vernon, you have number 2, right?
Yes, I do, and this is Batgirl number 1. This will probably give us a better insight from what's happening from Birds of Prey. Beyond the Burnside, Chapter 1. The Batgirl you know and love is going global with Insta Award-winning and New York Times best-selling writer Hope Larson, and co-star artist Raphael Albuquerque. Thank you. In order to up her game, Babs travels to Japan on a quest to train with the most elite modern combat masters in the East. But when a chance of meeting with an old friend puts her in target on her back, Batgirl must need to use her skills to solve a new deadly mystery. So... don't really know exactly how this is going to tie in to Birds of Prey from the description, but I'm pretty sure once we get it, we'll figure out everything that makes this a good puzzle piece.
Yeah, I think this takes place before Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm. So this makes sense of her training. And plus, maybe this will show a little bit more insight of how she might have got her legs back. I know in New 52 they show that, but since things are a little different, might have a different origin of that.
Mm-hmm. And who is the art and the written by?
Let's take a look here. The art is done by... Raphael, and the screen goes all the way back up. Albuquerque, and cover by Raphael Albuquerque and written by Hope Larson. So, same people that's been working on it.
And Mark, you had number 3, I believe, right?
Detective Comics, number 937. Rise of the Batman. Chapter 4 in the issue, 937, Batman's found his way into the heart of the colony, the mysterious new organization cutting its way through Gotham City. Unfortunately, now that he's in, he may find there's no way out. First of all, I'm actually not quite caught up on this, so I can't really comment to this, but this does sound pretty darn cool. Mm-hmm. Actually.
And the art cover looks amazing with that Batman.
It really does.
American logo behind him.
I think that's really cool.
Or American flag behind him.
Who did this? The art was done by Ralph Fernandez.
Yes.
And Alvaro Martinez. It was actually really cool. The cover was done by, well, both of the same people. But this is really well done. Let me see if I can zoom in on that. Oh my gosh. let me tell you, okay, first of all, anybody listening right now knows that I am an art fanatic, especially when it comes to cover art, and this is powerful, and this speaks volumes to
they say never judge a book by its cover, but when you're talking comic books, come on. The cover is usually what sets the pace for this, and this is impressive.
And I was saying, I usually get the Detective comic books, I'll just download them digital on my phone, but with this cover, I'm buying the book. This is something I can't pass up. This is going to be something I'm going to have to show my kids. This is a really good this is really good artwork for a Batman cover. I never thought I would see something like that with him with the American flag behind him.
Yeah. Well, I have the next one, and it's actually The Flash number 3. Now, The Flash hasn't been impressing me with the art, but the story, I love The Flash any way you get it. But it says, Lightning Strikes Twice, Chapter 3. In issue number 3, dozens of innocent people mysteriously gain superpower, or super speed, but not all are heroic. And it'll take everything The Flash and August have to harness the lightning before the black hole does. Now remember, he's been fighting against this black hole gang, and something happened at the end of the last issue that lightning struck all over the city, and people all over the place are getting super speed now. So the art is by Carmine DiGiano. Wait a minute.
God bless you.
Gian Domenico. That's it. And it was written by Joshua Williamson. So it's interesting seeing what's going on with the story, and it'll be weird to see a lot of super speedsters running around all at once.
Yeah, that's going to be too much to handle.
So, Vernon, you actually have the next one.
Yes, this is Hal Jordan and Green Lantern's number 1. The Sinestral's Law, Chapter 1. With no backup and only his ring and battery to keep him alive, Hal Jordan strikes towards battle with the Sinestro Corps, while the greatest foe perhaps has to wipe up the Green Lanterns, all of them outside of existence. Art by Jordi Targola? Doger? I'm chopping up that name. And written by Robert Vendini. So from what we saw last time, Sinestro's gotten really, really old from all the dealings he had with the ring, but with Hal Jordan coming back, Sinestro asks the Parallax for another favor, so we may see Sinestro full force going against Hal Jordan once again. But since this is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, we may be getting some help from John Stewart and Guy Gardner.
Kyle Rayner. Hopefully we'll get them back, especially Kyle. Kyle's still my favorite Lantern.
Well, and Kyle's still the White Lantern right now, so after all this goes on, he may retire that White Lantern ring and go back to green, or he might deal with the White. Either way, I like Kyle, whatever he's doing. I love the character, too. So We'll see. We'll see.
And I believe it's your turn, Mark.
I don't want to. Okay.
Well, this is a good one, though.
It is a good one. And I'll save my comment for after this. But Nightwing, number 1. Better than Batman. Chapter 1, Batman taught Nightwing everything he knows. But what if everything he taught him was wrong? When Dick is stuck with a new mentor who challenges everything Batman taught him, Nightwing has to shatter his concept of justice in order to fight for what he knows is right. Writer Tim Seeley, Grayson, Batman, Robin Eternal, launches Nightwing onto a new quest alongside rising talent Javier Fernandez, the Red Hood, also known as Arsenal. Artwork by Javier Fernandez, and written by Tim Seeley. Admittedly, I was never a huge fan of Nightwing. While he is a cool character, I kind of stopped reading until, like, after he first emerged, I started reading him way back when. But then I kind of dropped off a little bit. So this does look pretty cool. I might actually have to pick this up because if we're looking at a new series here, this might be the opportunity to get back into it. And the cover art right alone is actually really cool.
Yeah.
And see, you got lucky, too, if you get back into reading it because this Nightwing has his blue logo back instead of that red thing he had.
He does, doesn't he? Look at that.
Yeah. Well, was that Jeff Johns that said that? I can't remember. I think it was Jeff Johns that was saying how, hey, we finally got Nightwing back in his blue logo, not that red stupid thing. Even he didn't like it either, so.
Well, the one thing I would suggest, Mark, if you're gonna jump into Nightwing, get the Rebirth special first, the Nightwing Rebirth. Because it goes
Hang on. I need to write that down.
Yeah. They came out
go ahead.
Last week or 2 weeks ago. Nightwing Rebirth, number 1.
Nightwing Rebirth number one.
Because it basically bridges the gap. Dick Grayson for the last couple of years has been, they've been had him in that Agent Grayson, which was a spy book. And he wasn't a superhero at all. He was just a spy for this company or this organization called Spiral. So that the Rebirth book actually takes him from being a spy and back into being Nightwing.
Oh, no kidding. Really?
Yeah.
Well, we reviewed it
last week, I believe.
I haven't listened to last week's yet. So. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
So,
if you could look at my phone right now, you'd see how far behind I am on most of my favorite shows.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm actually, I want to say I'm like 2 weeks behind on this one. Sorry, I apologize.
No, you're fine. And, I know the feeling.
There are tons of other shows that I'm so far behind on that I just,
So many shows, so little time.
I know, right? I only get 24 hours in a day, and I've got like, 130 that I like to listen
Never
to.
Never enough.
Well, we still have three more books for this next week, because and then next month, I looked at the list and we're up to almost 10 books a week, because they just keep adding
in.
Yeah, I
just looked at that too. So I'm like, oh man.
The next one is Red Hood and the Outlaws Rebirth Number One. When a shocking encounter with Batman solidifies the Red Hood status as a villain, Jason Todd goes deep undercover to take down Gotham City's criminal underworld from the inside. Along the way, Jason meets two unlikely allies. A disgraced Amazon warrior named Artemis, and a half-baked Superman clone called Bizarro. The DCU's Dark Trinity is born. So you were right, it was Bizarro.
Yeah, I figured that. I'm like, the way he has the white skin, I'm thinking, yeah, Doomsday wouldn't come out like that or anything like that, or another Clark Kent, so.
It's interesting that he's a clone. Wasn't Doomsday originally from another planet that just was like a spin-off of what Earth would look like?
Oh, no, he was, but with the movie, since we were first reading Rebirth that first week, I didn't know where they were going, so I was just trying to, put my two cents out there, I guess, figure out what they were doing.
Art is done by Dexter Soy and is written by Scott Lobel. Or Lobel.
I have to say that I'm usually not a fan of that style of artwork, but that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
And for the cover.
And I was a big fan of when the Red Hood and Outlaws first came out. So I'm going to have to see if I like this one as much as I did the original.
The cool thing is Artemis in this. Is that the same one that eventually works with Green Arrow?
Mm-hmm.
The Amazon Artemis?
No.
This is different. This is Artemis from Wonder Woman.
Yeah, no, I'm saying this is the Amazon Artemis, not the Sportsmaster and I forget what her name was.
And Huntress.
But not the one like we saw in Young Justice. This is actually like Artemis from Wonder Woman's Amazons.
Yeah, wasn't she like one of Wonder Woman's chief rivals on Paradise Island?
Yeah, but they were also friends because whenever a battle came, they were always on the same side, so.
Okay. Well, that's Red Hood and the Outlaws. Vernon, you have the next one.
Yes, I do. This is Titans
which is fitting.
Number one. Of course. Anything Teen Titans. When Mark was talking about how he got into the DC comic books, I was thinking Teen Titans was one of the first comic books that got me into the DC world, so.
You young whippersnapper.
Hey, it was called Teen Titans. I had to, after an old ally returns to the team, the Titans set their sights on a dangerous enemy with the power to change reality itself. But the Titans have never faced a threat as this massive before. And with such much going on and much is on the line, will they be able to stand a united team, or will the past mistakes be their undoing? Also, the enemy on this cover is Mammoth. If you guys remember from the Teen Titans TV show, Mammoth was one of the villains in the Hive, and he also has a sister in the comic book. So I wonder if we'll get to see her back again. Art by Norman Ratmud and written by Dan Abnett. Abnett. So we have all the Titans back, and I think the Titan they're talking about that return was Wally, but
yeah.
There could be another one returning, too, because there are some that they are missing here that was in Titans Hunt. So,
well, the nice thing is with Titans back is the fact that we get Wally back, so we can actually watch Wally West doing stuff again. That was one of my biggest problems with Rebirth was the fact that Wally was gone. That's one of the most exciting things about Rebirth, or New 52 was Wally was gone. Rebirth was they brought him back. So exciting for me.
And to me, with the Teen Titans, if you're going to have Titans book and you're going to have Dick Grayson, Donna, Garth, and Speedy all in there together, but you don't have Wally, then don't have the Justice League with the Flash. It just feels like you can't have one without the other, you know?
Yeah.
So with Wally being back, I have my Teen Titans and I have my Justice League, and all of them can go hand in hand again. It's, so, that makes me very happy.
Really excited. So, Mark, you have the last one.
What? I do?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, Wonder Woman.
Save the best for last, right?
That's right. Wonder Woman. First of all, let's see here. Wonder Woman number 3, The Lies. Chapter 2, Wonder Woman must team up with one of her greatest enemies to solve a growing mysterious mystery about that person.
Themyscira.
Themyscira.
I know. I was just thinking. I can speak. I promise.
You could have fooled us.
Lies continues. Yeah, right. I cannot stress how excited I am for this. This is actually one of the coolest things. And if you look at this cover, and actually I will say this, the art by Liam Sharp, also cover by, written by Greg Rucka. Rucka. Yeah, that. I love the outfit they've given Wonder Woman. Now, to sound like, you know, fashionista over here, we've gone from different versions of the outfit to, I mean, in every really direction. But this is actually really cool. And I am actually excited to get on in on this one. I have not started this part yet. Now, I've been a fan of Wonder Woman for years, so okay. I'm ready to grab these. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm going to let you finish.
I haven't been to a comic book shop in 3 months, so.
Ah,
I see.
So I'm missing out on quite a few things.
Yes.
But there's two things I was going to tell you here. Does this Wonder Woman suit look a little familiar?
A little bit, yes. Yes, indeed.
I think they pulled this directly from Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman from the Batman vs. Superman, which it doesn't look bad. This looks great.
No, because and if you actually enjoyed Wonder Woman's or Gal Gadot's portrayal of Wonder Woman in Batman v Superman, which I think everybody did, because as soon as she came on the screen, everybody was hooting and hollering, going, "Yeah!" You know,
and the way they portrayed her, she wasn't too over. It was just Wonder Woman on screen.
Absolutely, and I'm a fan. I have been for a very long time, but this definitely very similar to Batman v Superman, Gal Gadot, and I'm actually excited to pick this up. So.
And the second thing I was going to tell you, I don't know how familiar you are. You say you've been to the comic shop about 3 months. So just to let you know, all the trendy are somehow working with their old rivals. Like Wonder Woman, and a couple issues ago, she actually cheated for help. That's right. Why she's on there. Batman now works with Clayface.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As part of the Central Comics, Clayface is part of the team.
I've seen some of the things that have been going around. I've kind of kept a little bit abreast of things like that. So, and also I do get stuff on my tablet.
Yeah.
So I do check out some digital comics and things like that. So I do get to see some of these things, but I haven't been able to keep up with everything. And not only have I been on a podcast hiatus, but I've also been on a hiatus from a lot of other stuff because I've been doing this other stuff.
So
you understand where I'm coming from. And it's kind of frustrating because I get to listen to you guys and then I get to be like, oh, well, damn, I need to grab that. What am I doing with my life? You know,
hey, you have all the time to catch up, but the way DC's popping these things out on a 2 week basis, it's a lot.
It's ridiculous even.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's like holy mackerel!
And like, it's a good thing they're $2.
I am so excited with some of these, you know. And you know, having mentioned, let's go back a couple, like with Nightwing. I could definitely get back into it. I have no problems whatsoever. It's just that it kind of originally it came out when he came out, he kind of detracted away from some of the other things that I was trying to trying to get into. And I hadn't picked him up. And then, you know, having read some of these other little things that have been going on, it's just like, OK, well, this is kind of cool. So let's get it back into this. And then, Ken, with your recommendation, I think I'm going to do that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Nightwing Rebirth number one.
And so this is a good time to break into any of these because they're all – any of them that started – all of these, if you wanted to get into the Rebirth titles, I would suggest doing the Rebirth title first and then doing their number ones because Rebirth is basically going to set you up for where this new series is going.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
So – but that was our previews for what's coming up for next week. So I think that just about takes us towards the end now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Mark, and I want to thank you. Go ahead, Vernon.
I was going to say thanks, Mark, for coming on the show. We loved having you on here.
Oh, it was fun. It was absolutely great. And I, well, certain issues were not quite spoiled for me, you know.
Yeah.
But it did get me really revved up to actually go and grab these. So.
And with the way these things are coming out, if you read before and then read after previously, yeah, you're going to spoil too much for you. Because once you get in there, you'll forget what we even talked about. Oh, that makes sense, that story and that. So, and by the way, the Wonder Woman story out of everything, it bounces back. Each issue seems to be a prequel. The next one is dealing with current events. The next issue is a prequel. So
yeah, right now they're running two different stories in Wonder Woman. Every other comic is one of the two stories. That
I'm all about.
Wonder Woman Year One running on the evens, and then this story here of Lies is on the odds.
Sweet.
But Mark, like he said, I want to reiterate, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for
There's always
me.
A seat open if you got a, if you got time and you want to sit in with us. Do you know how to get a hold of us?
Who are you again?
I don't know. I'm some guy with a beard. So why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, though?
Well, you know, you can find me on Facebook. Well, actually, you can find the network on Facebook, facebook.com/TangentBound Network. Also, at TangentBoundPC on Twitter. And also, yeah, just typical email, mark@TangentBoundNetwork.com. If you have questions or comments about podcasts that are on the network, or if you wanted to get started in a podcast, or you have a podcast and want to get on the network, just hit me up. I'm more than willing to listen. My door is always open, so yeah, it's
awesome.
All good.
Well, Vernon, before you tell everybody where to get a hold of us, I actually remember I mentioned earlier that about Wookiee Radio, but tonight we're actually recording episode one of Wookiee Radio, a brand new Star Wars podcast with myself, Mike, Derek, and Brett from over at the Weeby Geeks podcast. Mike said this should be up on Monday, but it's already on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, anywhere else you can get podcasts. Look up Wookiee Radio. It's also on Facebook, Twitter, all of that also. So look them up, find it, and hang out with us. Also, I'm not sure what the channel is going to be, but there will be a Mixlr live broadcast, just like we do our shows, running every when we record. We'll be recording late night on Saturdays. So anybody who wants to sit in, we will have a Mixlr chat running the whole time also. So, Vernon, why don't you tell everybody where they can get a hold of us?
You can reach us on social media on Instagram. That would be DC Superpowers Podcast. On Twitter, that's Superpowers DC. And on Facebook, is DC Superpowers Podcast. And for my personal usage, and thank you guys for commenting on some of the toys I posted yesterday for DC Collectibles from San Diego Comic-Con. Mine's is Hollow Knight Wolf at Instagram. On Twitter, it's Viello. And on Facebook, Vernon McElwain Moore.
And I'm on Facebook or Twitter and Instagram as GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. You can also find me weekly on GeekWatch 1 and on now on Wiki Radio. So if you're interested in those. So other than that, I think we have Mark. I got a text from Cyborg that Batman is actually looking for you. So
I
don't know.
I didn't mean it, Batman. Okay, it's just coffee. I'm well, really okay. Just, I promise.
Well, we'll show you the secret back entrance that you might be able to slip out. So, super friends, we're gonna have to let you go to teach show them where to get out of here. So, with that, guys, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.